I don't really drink anymore, so I don't really go out. If I go out, it's to watch like a friend do a drag show.
Where do you meet dudes now?
It's on Instagram usually. Grindr. Fans? Instagram. Fans, like I mean, just people who find me hot and will message me, or me vice versa. You start liking each other's pictures, and then it's like, hey, hi. I mean, my last boyfriend and I found each other that way.
He likes your pictures? And
I liked his first, then he liked mine, then we started talking, FaceTiming, jacking off, boom, boyfriend.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank Podcast. My name is Ari Shaffir. On today's episode, Mateo Lane is on. Dude, okay, so I had a barbecue over this, I think maybe July 4th, or just some fucking weekday. I was hiking a bike ride with Joe DeRosa, and I saw somewhere at the end of fucking East River Park, was this like open field? And I'm like, oh, dude, we got to have a fucking... I don't have a yard anymore. I had a yard in New York. If you don't know, if you're new to this podcast, it's one of the... Listen, man, you left your regrets behind. You didn't write that one down, though. No, I didn't write that one down. Maybe that's for next year. I gave up that apartment. It's not a regret. I had to. It became too small. But that backyard was the fucking tits, dude. And I loved having barbecues, inviting comics over on a weekday. Enjoy the fucking benefits. Come over for 2 hours. Who gives a fuck? Bring a beer. And so I missed it. And I had one. I was like, let's have that at fucking East River Park. Got there. First of all, when you say show up at 1, I mean, you got to be prepared for the 2 hours of sitting down that you're doing. iPhone 6, iPhone 11. iPhone 6, iPhone 11. All right, it's got to be off by now. You got to be prepared for the 2 hours you're going to sit alone. As comics are like, sure, I'll be there at 1. And then at 4, they go, hey, I might not make it. Well, thanks a fucking lot. Anyway, whatever. I talked to Rogan, I think. Yeah. I called him. Just an excuse to make some phone calls. And then people started showing up. One of the guys, Feeney, Sagalo. Fucking, who else was there? Was my friend Nick Youssef? I don't know. We barbecued. I got a little fucking disposable grill that came with coals. And we made it happen. At some point, the cops told us, like, hey, you guys, they drove up. Like, you can't, this is not the barbecue area. And we're like, oh, okay, we had just lit the fucking coals. On a rickety fucking... It wasn't one of those flat ones. It was one of the stand-up ones, but like $25. I'm doing well. Thank you, thank you for the Patreon people. You made this podcast happen. You made the situation that I had $30 to waste on a grill that I used one time. Why don't you give it to somebody? Why don't you give it to somebody? How long are you gonna carry around a dirty grill? You're a fucking idiot. So, I was like, so these cops came up and they start, they go, hey, you can't barbecue here. I was like, what do we barbecue? And he goes, you gotta barbecue here. It's like way down. It's like a 15 minute walk. I'm like, well, and he goes, well, wait till those coals to go out and then wrap it up and get out of here. And we're like, fuck, okay. We'd already barbecued, I think a touch maybe, or I don't know. And then we're like, what should we do? And then he drove off and he was like, what should we do? Like, we should stay. What he's doing is he's saying like, hey guys, I told you in case anybody fucking gets me in trouble. I don't give a fuck. None of you seem like a problem. That's what he's trying to say. So we all got to talking. Oh, by the way, I should tell you, before we go on, I have a sponsor today, everybody. Please, now, a word from our sponsor. Guys, today's sponsor is 3chi.com. Oh, man, you know what they do? It's 3CHI, but it rhymes with 3chi. You know what they could have done? 3chai. Chai is the Jewish name for life. Instead of 3chi.com, use promo code SKEPTIC at checkout, get 5% off your order. Instead of 3chi.com, if they just put chai, which is spelled, I guess, the same way as chai, but then it would be confusing. It'd be 3chai.com. It's 3chi.com. Use SKEPTIC at checkout, 5% off your order. It's Delta 8. It's like THC, but it's like, it's not quite CBD. It's not quite THC. It'll get you fucked up, but it's like, it's legal, but you got to be 21 and over to purchase it. It's psychoactive. It'll give you a buzz. So use it responsibly. Why do you guys even put that? I mean, I guess you have to say that. Use it responsibly. But chai, if they put chai, which is 18, so chai is a sign of, it means life in Hebrew. 3G.com is sponsoring, right now, sponsoring this Hebrew tutorial. Chai, because the letter ch is it's chet, chaf or chet is 8. And yud is the I is 10, so it's 18. So life, it's a two-letter word, chai, chai, is 18. So they say like life is 18. Although if you want to take 3C products, life starts at 21 because 21 and over. But so we give gifts. Jews give gifts, bar mitzvah gifts, wedding gifts in multiples of 18. So you might give like $180. That's 10 times chai. Another multiple, the most common one is 1 times chai, 18. So 3 chai, 18, 36, 54. So 54, I'm doing a lot of numerology here to sell 3chi.com. Use promo code SKEPTIC to get 5% off your order. 54, 5.4%. Oh, they should do that. 3 chai, 5.4% off your order. Well, none of that is true. It's just 3chi.com, spelled C-H-I, but it's called 3G. It's a federally legal version of THC and is a more functional alternative to marijuana. It gives an amazing buzz and great body feel with a clearer head and less anxiety and paranoia. Now, sometimes the paranoia is good. Okay, so get 3G.com if you want to think clearly. But sometimes that paranoia, like, dude, you ever see Memento? That movie? That guy needed paranoia. So that guy in Memento should not be using 3G.com. That guy should be using straight fucking bathtub mixed THC. But for those of you who are not trying to catch a killer while you have temporary amnesia throughout the day, the rest of you who are trying to get shit done but want to get fucked up, it's 3chi.com. Again, use promo code SKEPTIC at checkout to get 5% off your order. I got to ask Robbie if I could say the stuff they tell me not to say. If I could just make fun of it. Anyway, 3G.com for Delta 8 THC products. All products are formulated by a biochemist and made in the USA with USA grown hemp. Well, that's great, everybody. Make America great again. Buy drugs made in America. 3G.com, promo code SKEPTIC at checkout. Now, for 5% off your order, back to my episode. Anyway, so while at this barbecue, we all got to talking. Mateo Lane showed up. Christina Hutchinson was there. Who the fuck else was there? Now I really want to know. I really want to know who else was there. Anyway, Mateo Lane was there. And we all started talking. We started about sex, who's fucking who, you know. Not there, but I mean in general. Like, you guys getting laid or how you... And then I asked Mateo, how did the gay community handle, how are they dealing with this virus, this lesser of two viruses? And he started talking, then he started, like, telling me a little bit about gay life right now. He was fucking in late. They're way different than they were gays when I was in college. When I started meeting gays in college, like, they're different now. And maybe it's because they were too young, but I don't know. And it's New York. This wasn't New York. This was fucking Maryland in college. But, like, damn. So we had really interesting stories about what gay life was like. Last time I did a podcast on just what gay culture was, it got to be 7-8 years ago with Justin Martindale and Sean Halpin. Yeah, when Justin came from just getting a fucking threesome on a fucking Wednesday in Addison, Texas, with two dudes that have never met each other or him. And I'm like, damn, Grindr is for real. So now I have updated questions. And Mateo, a fucking gay... He has answers. He's in the fucking dating world right now in homosexuality. He's a homo. He has appeared on this podcast before. One time, I don't know which episode it was. We're all in Central Park, and I said, hey, Mateo, I was recording the end of my intro or something like that. I was like, you want to sing the intro music? And he sang a song. I don't know which one it was. He's got a great voice. Heavenly. So guys, let's start the episode. I can't wait. This is a fucking great one. Don't forget, hit subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. And if you're not watching YouTube, do me a favor, go to youtube.com/Ari Shaffir I have a bunch of fucking podcast videos on there, clips, also some fucking travel shit, and a few other things, some fan-made videos. It's all pretty cool. Really, really bringing it around. The editors are doing a hell of a job. Guys, Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank. You're gay, dude. With Mateo Lane. Or, haha, you're gay? No, you're gay, dude. That's gay, dude. That's gay? All right, well, I'm going to have to think up a topic. Fucking homo? Nah. Well, he is a fucking homo. That is a lot of it. Gaywad? Gaywad with Mateo Lane. Nah. You're gay, dude. I think it's going to be that. I think it's going to be you're gay, dude. With Mateo Lane. Starts now. I just kind of wish you were gay. I just kind of wish you were gay. I just kind of wish you were gay.
Even NPR, I know NPR is left-leaning, but they have a podcast where you literally can just get the headline. So it's just 5 minutes, and it's just some lady being literally just says it. Today on the border of China and India, there was an altercation between armies, and tensions are rising. President Trump is going to be campaigning in Ohio. Joe Biden is taking off for the next 2 days to prepare for the debate. I mean, there's no... Like, Fran Lebowitz said it best. She was like, you read the New York Times. She goes, if the news is the bombing off in Afghanistan, the first three paragraphs are on a dusty road. And it should, by paragraph three, it says a bomb went off. The bomb is the news.
The bomb is the news.
Everything else is the writer.
Right.
So we've just been confused on how to ingest and take in the news.
I try to notice when they have, like, adjectives, which is like, this has no place in here, you know?
Right.
When they have words like a racist statement of whatever. It's like, no. Just say the statement. Let us decide.
I'm reading Mariah Carey's book right now because of course. Yeah. And she admittedly writes it with somebody else, right? But it's one of these things where, like, this book has an extra 30 pages based off the adjectives used in every sentence. Like, even when she was describing her dad's pasta, she's like, the smell of the salty pasta coming from... I'm like, all of this, you know? No one has ever described... I'm Italian. No one's ever described pasta this way.
It's so great when you see through somebody. You're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, just trying to sound. I think there's a difference between someone like I love Christopher Hitchens, who actually understands the English language and can manipulate it to his, I mean, he's like a wizard with the English language. So hearing him use words that obviously I don't know or couldn't use to me is like, okay, this is impressive. If anyone else is just using, throwing adjectives in to get an extra word count.
She sultrily came through the room.
Exactly. What? Yeah.
Also, Christopher Hitchens was a writer instead of like a journalist.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that, I'm like, yeah, flower it up.
Yeah. I miss Christopher Hitchens.
How's he doing? Is he just retired or haven't followed
dead.
Alive? What? No!
That's very Jiminy Glick of you.
Yeah. What happened to Jiminy Glick? He died of heart failure.
Jiminy Glick asked about some actor who died in like the 50s. Like, we don't hear much from her anymore. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry to say they passed. No. Like,
no. Yeah, that guy was great. Yeah. What are you going to, I mean, by the time it's come out, debates will be over. Maybe the election. What are you watching for when you watch the debates?
I mean, at this point, just to stay on entertainment. Like, it's just, to me, it's like watching The Swan. Remember that reality show 10 years, 15 years ago?
Gave an ugly girl plastic surgery?
Yeah. Well, it's the worst show. Literally, it's the worst show to ever exist. They took 10 women who just needed a blowout and a new jacket, and they forced them through months of plastic surgery, and then they shielded them from their families in mirrors for like months.
While they healed?
Yeah. They didn't want them to see themselves or their family to see them. And they would come check on them. Like, they'd be all bandaged. They look like the mummy. They'd walk in. And the producers, it was just so reality TV back then. Because, you know, they'd be like, I want to see my family. And the producers are like, right. And then, you know, they see themselves. They basically, the show was, they took the women, made them look exactly like the hosts of the show. They saw themselves in a mirror. They wept. And then what made it even worse is that they entered them in a beauty pageant contest. So now, not only did they get a makeover, but now they have to prove that they're more beautiful than the other women that got a makeover.
No, they got to go against the other.
Yes. And then whoever gets crowned the swan. I mean, it
is the plastic surgeon there to like accept part of the award?
Well, they had the team of plastic surgeons. They would always come out at the end every time they would weep, and the women would have to thank them. You made me beautiful. It was, I mean, it, I'm sure the producers are rotting in jail.
Was it, you ever see somebody who's like, I remember, he's dead now, but who's that super fat comedian to like Vegas? John Panette.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah.
I remember him coming to the improv one day and people were like, John, you lost so much weight. It was all these Hollywood agents and stuff. You've lost so much weight. You look amazing. And I hadn't seen him before, so I don't know how fat he got, but I'm like, that's a massive obese man. He's going to die of heart failure. What are you talking about?
He had a great bit about Italy. Did you ever see it? Uh-uh. Oh, it's so good. I think he did. I'm like, you know, and you're like, oh, maybe that's not the same person. It is. That's the same person. He's like, he's Italian, right? Panette.
I think so.
Yeah. Sorry, what were you saying? I completely interrupted.
Oh, it's like people are like, you look so beautiful. But it was like, if you saw them from scratch, would they be beautiful? Or is it beautiful compared to?
Is this a before and after? Yeah. Did they have some kind of accent? They recovered?
Do they look like better looking freaks? Or did they actually look good?
I know. Well, sometimes, you know. Don't you find, though, the older... Like, I used to be so much meaner. The younger version of me. I mean, obviously, insecurity. And I'm mad at the world myself. But now that I'm older, I'm kind of like, oh, I found myself becoming more nice. Or, like, forgiving. Or less harsh on people for how they look and things.
Yeah. Also, you've had, I guess, more bad days since you were little.
Probably. We I also have. I got double whammy from an Italian family and being gay. Both very look focused.
Look oriented. Yeah.
So, like Italians especially are super look oriented.
I think I've noticed that too. Just a calming down of like when you're like 26, you're like fuck everything, fuck this. Right. And now I have to like force myself to like see the shittiness and things. Sometimes I'm like, well, it was pretty nice. And you're like, that's not funny.
Or if you see the shittiness, you're like, oh, they're damaged. They're damaged goods. They're hurting. They're projecting. Me too.
Yeah. You ever see, I want it so bad when someone's yelling just to be like, what's going on, man? You need some help? Like, you seem upset. Like, but in a real way. Of like,
right.
What can I do to help you here? No normal person would act like this.
Right.
I've never done it though. So here's what I think I thought of it, this topic then at that barbecue on the East River.
Oh my God, where we were all, I was bit by something. I mean, we were all getting bit up. So we were.
It was right at that magic hour where it was like, fine. And everyone was like,
yep. And then I had, it was like my leg was swollen from whatever bit me.
Wasn't it that massive bug? Some weird, like, I've never seen it before bug?
Whatever. I don't know. I didn't see what bit me. I know we killed like three wasps, but. Yeah, I had like a giant welt on my leg for like a week, and then it turned green. I was like, "What is happening?"
Really?
Yeah, then it went away.
Oh, it's during COVID too. You got to start thinking like, is that a symptom?
I had COVID.
Did you really?
Yeah, I had it in March. I got it from this guy. I had it in March.
Yeah, from a hookup.
Well, we were like sort of like trying to see each other, and then I mean, I'm talking about it on stage now, but yeah, essentially we it ended. But we had COVID together, so we kind of quarantined for like a week together.
That's the best way because you're not lonely.
Well, it's true. However, he got sicker than I did, and so then I had to like take care. I literally played Nurse Joy, like I was trying to resurrect this guy back to health, and then of course he dumps me. I was like, well, this
really?
Is nice. Yeah, well, I'm gonna start. It's fine. I mean.
How bad was it?
I had really bad backaches, and I had almost like a burning sensation in my nose. I couldn't quite describe what was happening in my nose. Someone else said they had the same thing, and then I couldn't smell or taste. But I didn't have any respiratory problems. I could breathe, and I wasn't coughing or anything.
Yeah.
But then I got strep in April. Strep was worse. I couldn't swallow. I hooked it up with this guy. But I couldn't swallow. I hooked up with him, and he came over, and he said, you know, sometimes you'd like put something on TV just to have it on. He picked, not me, Lilo and Stitch. So we're fucking, and it's weird to
Lilo and Stitch?
Lilo and Stitch.
That seems pedo-y.
Well, I will say it's strange to be blowing someone in the background. You hear, oh, Hanelman's family. I mean, it's, but anyway, he gave me strep. So then I had to go to the doctor and get strep, you know, tests and stuff, and they all were like, it's COVID. I'm like, I had COVID already. They're like, Jesus, man, what happened to you?
They're like, slow down. Well, they're like, let's go see a therapist instead of a doctor.
Yeah, I need to see a therapist, but
yeah, but you said something about prep that got me like, so like it made me realize like I don't know enough about gay culture right now.
Yeah, oh, prep, Truvada, or I'm on Descovy, which is a other form of Truvada, which is a prophylactic. It's a antiviral drug. So you essentially take Truvada daily. It's a daily pill,
yeah.
So that you have, I think it's a 99.9% chance of protecting you to not catch HIV.
Which is like, you're not, it's better than condoms. First pregnancy.
Well, I mean, I think so, but condoms. What are those?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fact that you don't have to avoid pregnancy is, I think, the number one benefit of being gay.
I mean, we just have to avoid death. I mean, you have to remember, I grew up. I think that the perception of HIV is, at least in my community, in the gay community, the queer community, it's just so much better. I have sex with men who are HIV positive.
That blows my mind.
But why? So
it's, no condom.
No.
Pull out.
If they're going to see their doctor regularly and they are what's called undetectable.
Magic Johnson,
right. If you're undetectable, you are untransmittable. So people who have HIV,
What's his name from Two and a Half Men said? He was undetectable and then he ended up giving it to people?
No, I think that I have no idea what his situation. He doesn't seem to me like someone who's regularly visiting their doctor. So let's not use him as the standard.
You're right.
But yeah, the medication has gone. Obviously, there's always going to be drawbacks and setbacks. If you have HIV, it's not like you're good to go. I mean, that's a conversation you have to have with your doctor. But yeah, if you're untransmittable or undetectable, you're untransmittable. And if you're on PrEP, which I am, I mean, the chances of you getting it are literally impossible. And people can go and live their normal lives.
You fucking undetectable level of AIDS with a
HIV.
AIDS. Sorry, yeah. With a barrier of PrEP.
Right, PrEP is like your self protection, and then they're on medicine and they're undetectable, so they can't transmit it.
Damn, if you were to have sex with like Tom Hanks, Philadelphia, like very transmittable.
But, which I love that scene with my Maria Callas where she's singing opera. Remember that? Where he's showing her the opera.
Oh, yeah.
La Mama Morta. Yeah. Such a good scene.
If you had sex with that, with the PrEP, you also almost definitely would not get it.
Yeah, probably not.
Wow. That so changes the game.
Well, of course. And PrEP is really, I think there was a huge stigma. Maybe 10 years ago, things really started to shift, at least in my mind. But you have to remember, I was born in the 80s. So when I was a young kid, early 90s, all I knew that is if you were gay, you'd die of AIDS. That's just what we were told. So my whole life, I was instilled with this fear, knowing that my community was dying and that once I became 18, it was still fresh. I mean, there were still people who were like, yeah, just 15 years ago, everybody was dying. Yeah. And being gay and young and there wasn't YouTube and Facebook and all that, it's like finding your culture and finding out who you are, there's a lot of learning to do because we don't learn about it in school. And obviously people don't want to talk about it and you don't want to talk about it. Maybe you're not out. And there's a lot that you go through.
Your parents
out.
Also like, I got to tell them
It's a whole thing. So now it's obviously different. I mean, I have that joke where 7-year-olds are with purple hair talking to the human rights campaign being like, my struggle coming out. And I'm like, you piece of shit, go home, turn off the lights, listen to Madonna and cry like the rest of us. But, people have really come through, in a really, no pun intended, positive way about HIV. And, people are living with it and open about it, and it's not a problem. And it's just understanding the science and understanding that there's nothing wrong with having HIV. I would completely date and marry somebody who has HIV.
Wow, that's so much different.
Yeah, it's changed completely.
Because it wasn't just like a death sentence; it was also like a social death sentence.
It was everything. I mean, you have to remember too, AIDS is a lot of what pushed the gay rights movement because it forced us out of the closet. It forced people to come out because so many people were dying. You couldn't hide it anymore. You couldn't hide and say, I'm not gay, because you were dead and everybody around you was dead.
Damn. And so it was like what got gay people like normalized?
I don't know if I'd use the word normalized, but it at least got us out of the shadows and working together and fighting for our rights. But I mean, that took years and years and years. And let's be honest, there's still stigma everywhere.
Yeah.
And in America, people, especially cities, are like, it's fine. But it's like, yeah, but it's still illegal to be gay in 72 countries.
Where did you grow up?
Chicago.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking of relocating to Tanzania or Zimbabwe. They'll take Americans.
Really?
Just for the winter.
Why would you go there?
Well,
Zimbabwe, that's like south of...
South of what?
Where is that?
It's like mid-northern Africa.
Oh, I had no idea that's where it was.
You're not supposed to know African
geography. What language do they speak there?
Tanzanian? Is that a language? That
sounds like a language. Like in Morocco, they speak French at least. So I could, I'm like, okay, I could survive in Morocco.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just looking for somewhere to go, but then it looks like dank. I was like, nah. When I look at pictures, I'm like, this seems more dangerous.
I have no knowledge on that
foreign places. But in Tanzania, it is illegal to be gay.
Yeah, there's, I mean, I think 72 countries it's illegal, and I think, I don't know how many it is, like, punishable by death. Maybe, like, 7. I mean, like, a smaller number.
Oh, they light up gays there. I mean, like, fire them.
Yeah.
Like,
not so easy. Yeah. I didn't mean to start this podcast being like, what was...
Well, we don't live there, so it's okay.
What was the life of gays?
Yeah.
But at least here, things are getting better, and I think exposure on TV is huge. Just seeing yourself on TV is, I mean, huge.
Where did you grow up?
Chicago, Northwest Side in Arlington Heights.
Do you remember the first gay I remember on TV, besides like a Liberace, like...
My joke is C-3PO. But Ellen...
Which her character came out of the closet.
I was horrified, too, because a lot of us watched...
Buddy, we're doing a podcast.
A lot of us watched in fear.
Being, like, thirsty about it. Yeah.
I remember watching in fear... to see how the world would react when she came out. And boy, that I jump right back into the closet.
We can't sponsor you anymore.
Everybody.
It's disgusting.
I watched her Ellen, her Oprah interview right during that time.
Yeah.
And the way that these women in the audience were talking to her was as if Ellen had been caught slaughtering a child in traffic. I mean, it was
what
like,
did I say? I don't remember.
You are disgusting and this is horrible and you should have never done this and you are like, just,
you should have never done what? Have your character come out?
Any of it. Just her being, saying she was gay.
I remember Will Ferrell at SNL. I think it was him going like at the desk. Going, you know, her character's out of the closet. That's okay. At least she's still a bomb bitch. You can, like, fuck, you know, men with the best of them. And then whoever was the host was like, oh, no, she's gay. I'm like, right, her character. And he was like, no, she's also gay. And he just goes, that's so disgusting.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I remember, I think I'm, my whole life, I mean, it was just, everything was gay jokes. Everything's gay jokes.
Mine was my so-called life.
My so-called life?
Yeah. Was remember that MTV show with Claire Danes?
Claire Danes was in an MTV show.
It was right before you were aware of television, because I was a teenager.
Because I remember this show called Undressed. And do you remember Undressed?
It was like 20 different storylines.
Yes.
It was going like 2 minutes at a time. They could like move people in and out.
Yes. And the budget was like $5. I mean, it was there was no budget to that show, but they showed gay people.
Oh, right, because that was what... That's right.
I remember, like, sneaking, and you had, like, the remote so you could flip back to whatever other channel was on in case somebody walked in, and I was just...
like, you had the last channel?
Oh, yeah.
What? Football? What?
I mean, I was just salivating to see anything gay, because I was just so... That show was...
Oh, yeah, Undressed. They have a list of, like, actual actors who came out of Undressed, because they were just, like, anybody. You look good. You're in Hollywood. Come on. You could be on that show.
And they explored, like... I remember them talking about fetishes.
Threesomes.
Everything. There was a fetish where this guy wanted to keep seeing his girlfriend eat, so he kept making her food, and I'm like, that exists? I didn't know. It was a really profound show. I mean, Undressed was like, it was like burned into my brain of like,
it was like soap opera-ish where there was drama, but it was also just, most of the drama was like, can I see what happens next?
Right.
But you had like 5 or 10 different storylines, so it was like constant cliffhangers.
Yeah.
That they'd come back to like 3 times per show.
It's whatever's softer than softcore porn. I mean, because people would be in their underwear.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
And I mean, and they also had that show Next on MTV, which I still think is the greatest show of all. Remember Next?
No.
Ah! Next is
it a dating show?
Yes. They had a bus and they would
say, oh yeah. And they had gays.
Yes. Yeah, and the gays always hooked up in the bus.
That's right, because they were like, yeah, if it was the heteros, they'd be like, I think you should date Margaret or Margaret, whatever. But
right.
We don't like each other. But the gays were always like, yeah, do
go ahead, do whatever. Let's say, yeah. And it was so funny. They get off the bus, they'd have to say like three things that describe themselves, and they're all over memes now, but you can see like, I love Skittles, I'm a badass bitch, and I learned how to swim when I was 4. And then they freeze and they come off the bus, the person's like, next. I mean, it just was
and it was
fabulous.
Like, they were trying to be cunty. They were just like, I say no.
Yeah.
Why though? Why? If there was no other people on the bus, you wouldn't say no. You'd be like, all right, you seem nice, let's hang out.
Yeah, you'd be like, all right, we'll get a cup of coffee
next. And I saw once at an open mic at the Westwood Brewco in LA, they were filming one of those dating shows, and this, it was down between two girls. I don't know what the beginning was, upstairs in the area. And he goes, I choose Margaret because she's this and this. I'm sorry, Samantha. And then they're like, good. All right, let's try it again. This time, choose Samantha. And I was like, what?
That's when TV was ruined for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just choose later. Next.
Well, there used to be a show called My Parents. That's setting, probably the
setting
show.
Him up with somebody.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, because the parents hated the boyfriend, so then we'll they find a guy. And then that guy takes her on a date, and then somehow they expect within 2.5 hours for her
you're
to just
dump the boyfriend who's been beating her into submission, so she like somehow likes him. By the way, your parents don't like your boyfriend, that's just gonna make you go to the boyfriend more.
I know. And most of the time, like, a bad boyfriend, I mean, they would never get as real as domestic abuse. They would just sort of like he just had like a earring.
Uh-huh.
And that was enough for the parents to be like, this guy's gotta go. There's always some mother from Minnesota with that haircut being like, we just love our daughter Allison, and she found this guy, and he likes the Beastie Boys, and I just don't know.
That's not the kind of rap I was raised with.
I was raised with the rap from the Container Store, so I don't...
They also was like, what happens if they go back to the boyfriend? Like, how do you think the boyfriend's going to treat you, mom? When you're like, you want a fucking reality show to get rid of me, you fucking bitch?
Well, we...
No, we won't be home by 11. Just assume that.
You just brought me and my boyfriend through humiliation and yourselves.
On national TV.
I'm not coming home for dinner, and I'm not bringing John.
Yeah.
You're right. I never thought about that. The repercussions afterwards.
That's what I always want to know, the repercussions of those shows, like when they do the Fix Up Your House show, when you live in like the ghetto and they fix up your house.
It's all fake. I remember they had a show where it was like a cutting hair show, which I loved. It was this weird looking Australian woman, and she has that like sleek A-line haircut and wears all black, and she'd walk into some shitty hair salon and she would be like, Nari, this isn't gonna work. Nari, you're doing it wrong. And then they do the makeover, and my friend was working at a salon where they did the makeover, and they just took all the stuff, threw it into the basement, put a new coat of paint on, and then they'd spend months taking all the shit out of the basement and throw it out. So they're just all fake.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Damn,
the swan was very real. I mean, they had to go through plastic surgery.
I wonder if, like, 2 weeks later, it started to fall off.
All of it.
I just took my hand inside my face.
Everything was wrong.
Now I got to look at, like, pictures of those women and see what they actually look
like. Would show, it's so humiliating on so many levels. I'd rather... They would take the women and put them in, looks like Walmart yellowed underwear, and have them stand, and they would put a grid over them, kind of like a war map, and they would point on her body where they need to make the changes.
Like a sorority?
Yeah. They'd be like, this, change her lips, change her cheeks, change her teeth, change her, and she's just standing there in gross coffee-stained underwear.
Ugh. That's what sororities did, right? Where they circle, like, to get in, they circle
fat. Yeah, but sororities and fraternities. No, I can't... All those... You didn't do any... No way.
No way.
I couldn't imagine you ever submitting to something like that.
All my friends in high school were like, we'll never join... What are you paying for friends? And then all but one of us joined a fraternity.
No,
it was so disappointing.
Only one of my friends did. The rest of us were like, no.
Is there a gay frat?
I think that I think they're all gay frats.
Yeah.
I mean, not to be this hacky joke, but, like, it's a little gay.
Yeah.
We're going to find women together by getting naked and parading around. And
Rogan used to have a joke about it, about threesomes. He was like,
who did?
Joe Rogan.
Work.
He was like, I feel like if you have a threesome, like run a train on a girl, you're really just gay. You're just like, you're using her as a conduit to touch dicks.
I don't know. I mean, first of all, I don't like threesomes. I've only had like three. And I think that they are just, I really hate them.
Why?
There's too much going on. And there is too much pressure. Maybe if I was in a couple and invited someone, that would be more fun. But to be the one invited, which usually people are like, oh, it's so much more fun. No. This is too much work. Too much expectation. I don't have that kind of chutzpah. I can't do this.
Also, if you're a girl, I think you can like settle down. Like, I can just lay here and have it happen.
Kinda.
Whereas a guy, it's like, I have to be mentally involved in this.
I gotta work.
Or it's like, yeah.
I don't want to work. I'm lazy. I'm lazy in bed sometimes.
I had a chick quit in the middle of a threesome.
Quit? Like, she's like tapped out?
I'm all fucked out. And it was like 15 minutes in. And I was like, well, and the other girl was like, we're both like, what? Like, what are you talking about? This is a rare situation. Like, I don't get involved.
I guess, yeah, maybe it is more rare for straight people.
And she was like, I don't know, fucking play with my tits while I fuck. Like, do something. Lay there and do something. I don't know.
I'd be like, I guess if I was in a threesome and someone's like, I'm out, I'd be like, all right, I like it better with two anyways. Fine, we'll go at it. I think a threesome is great if a guy, because, I mean, and I'm not that sexually, like, I make it sound like I'm, like, I'm not having a lot of sex. But if I was to have it, some guys like it where they just watch you have sex with someone else. I'm like, I could do this.
Okay.
Because I know how to put on a show. That's more fun for me, to have sex with somebody and then have someone watch. Although it is, I've never done it, but it's a little creepy to imagine somebody just in a corner jacking off.
You lose yourself in it, then you look over. Oh, oh my God, I forgot you were there.
In a shadow, just two glowing eyes, the sound of you fapping.
You have that. You have that. You have that light where you like turn it. And then you see it, you know?
For some reason, they just have a flashlight under their chin. I'm like, what are you doing over there?
Continue. Yeah, gay threesomes are like, it's got to be different than like hetero threesomes.
Oh, it's just a lot of work. It's a lot of like, yeah, I just can't with the with that watching porn and hearing everyone just fake it. God, I can't do it.
My friend fucked a porn star for a while, like dated one.
Work.
And I was like, was it correct? Because we saw her stuff, you know? Yeah. So we're like, is it like that? He goes, it is not. She is acting.
I had a joke where I was like, dating a porn star, you think that it's going to be like these wild nights and great sex. Truth is, you just watch a lot of Netflix together while he goes and has wild sex with other people. That's dating a porn star.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love sex workers, porn actors. And I think it's great. I have a lot of friends who do porn.
Really?
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, they seem, it's the only weird thing with them, because I used to hang out in the comedy world in L.A., there was just it this might weird be overlap.
Different. Straight porn, by the way, I have zero I don't, so it might be, again, a different world.
They were fun and chill, they liked comedy. The only weird thing was they were too casual about sex. Like, we would just be on a like outside a diner waiting to go in and be like, yeah, the squirting is a, and it's like, dude, I mean, I'm not everybody,
but that's
is.
Like that, but that's like us talking about jokes. I mean, it's so normal to them, like, yeah, I do, this is my job. So like, you know, they're like the way yeah, we talk about jokes.
Yeah, but if some lady with a husband and a daughter hears you saying like, you know, a good callback, I managed, they're not gonna be like, oh,
and walk away. What, suddenly you're like a conservative from Idaho? You're like, what? People are here in this diner.
I get weird about it.
They
I get
here.
Whenever I even cursing around like kids or like families, I'm really? Like, oh, I'm imposing on you. Oh, I'm imposing my weird lifestyle on your like, I get it. You're fucking raised normal.
I guess I don't think of it that way.
I can't even smoke cigarettes around like children.
Why? Who gives a shit? You got to go to Italy.
Everybody smokes.
They're like smoking while breastfeeding. I mean, everyone smokes in Italy.
I love the Mediterranean smoking. The rolling your own.
Oh, it's so great. Oh, my God. When I go, because I go to Italy like once or twice a year.
Your dad is from there?
My mom's family. Well, she's actually Italian-Mexican, but that's a whole other story. Yeah. My grandpa's Mexican. My grandpa had 5 kids with my grandma, who's Italian, my mom's dad, but he also had kids with another woman at the same time, and then he named the kids the same names so he didn't confuse them. So my grandma divorced him, and so when we remarried a Sicilian, so by the what? Time I was born, I just like had an Italian background, but technically I'm also
that's
Mexican.
Fucked.
Yeah. My mom was like fully half Mexican and Italian until she was like 15, and my grandma was like, nope, and they never spoke to them again. But we did 23andMe, and it's like your first cousin, and it's all these Mexican names.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm like, because Maldonado, which is our name, we're from Guanajuato. I'm like, it would be cool to like find my long lost family.
You speak Spanish and Italian? They're close, right?
They're the same language. I was watching this thing today. I love languages, by the way. But I was watching this thing today where, because the romance languages are so close, that they do these experiments to see if everyone in the romance languages can understand something. So they have a French guy, and then they have a Brazilian, an Italian, and a Mexican. And they can only speak their native tongue. So the French guy describes something in French, and then they all three have to converse with each other in their languages and guess
in
what
their,
the French guy is
saying. Each of their own languages? Wow, weird.
It's
are they related?
They're much? Super related. I mean, Spanish and Italian are like brother and sister. I mean, they're just so. Como estás? Como estás? ¿Cuántos años tienes? Like
Portuguese is not far off too. It's
Portuguese
like
is closer to Spanish, and then also has this weird Russian sound to it. I think it sounds like a Star Wars language.
I'm going to college.
Wajna Jedi. I mean, it's like whatever Bib Fortuna was speaking. So I speak Italian fluently, Spanish super proficient, and French pretty proficient, but I can't understand Portuguese. I can't hearing it. It's like it sounds like. I can't understand it at all.
I heard Cuban Spanish is like that.
Cuban Spanish is. I got into like, a cab once and the guy was like, ¿Tú hablas español? And I was like, claro que sí, hablo español. But I learned from Mexicans how to speak Spanish, so I speak like a Mexican with an Italian accent, so I kind of sound like Mario and Luigi. But he started talking and I could not understand him, and I kept saying to him in Spanish, I'm like, I'm really sorry, but like I'm having a really difficult time understanding your accent. Like I was trying not to be rude. But yeah. He might as well have been speaking Mandarin.
Do you ever do Edinburgh?
No.
Have you done it? No. But when you go there, it's 45 minutes away from Glasgow. Edinburgh's a government town.
Oh, I went to Glasgow. I did a festival in Glasgow.
Yeah, that's English. And I'm constantly saying, like, can you spell out the word you're saying? Like, I don't.
Bob, the drag queen, went there, and he asked this guy, he's like, what's your name? He's like, Bagel. He goes, what did you say? He goes, Bagel. He goes, Bagel. Bagel goes, spell it. He goes, M-I-C-H. He goes, Michael Bagel. He's like, all right. I've had enough here.
Yeah, that's how I know when I'm there. Like, I was like, Glasgow. Like, how'd you know? I'm like, because I can not understand you.
Right.
Versus Edinburgh, which just sounds fine.
It's weird, too, because, like, in Italy, they don't even just have accents. They have completely other languages. So everyone in Italy speaks two languages. They speak Italian, the national language, and then their regional language. Yeah, and they're not like accents. It's even more separate than like someone from Alabama and someone from Glasgow. They're different languages. So I'll go to like Naples and I have to ask people to speak Italian to me because they're just speaking a different language.
Speaking the Naples language.
I can't understand anything.
Whoa, weird.
Sicilian too.
There's, Spain has that too, right? With the Basque and the
Spain
and the,
has that Castilian and
what's the one in Barcelona where they're all separating that way?
But it's like in Sicily because my family lives in Sicily. I mean, I have to speak Italian to my uncle and then my cousin. He speaks Sicilian back. My cousin translates from Italian back to me. That's how we converse.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Yiddish is. It's like a mixture of Germanic and a little bit of Hebrew.
Yeah, because there's German
whatever,
words in Yiddish.
Mm-hmm, and then whatever region you're from.
Do you
has
speak Yiddish?
Nah, my dad does, and his parents did.
But you speak Hebrew.
Yeah, a little
did
bit.
You used to speak it better?
Oh yeah, when I lived there, I could like get by.
In Israel?
Nah, I'm like.
But can you understand
words.
It?
Yeah, if I was there, I could sort of understand. Unless you're having full conversation, then I'm like. But if it's like. If someone looks at me at the supermarket like, do you want a bag? I would kind of like know what that is. But right now I can't call to mind what the word bag is.
Right.
Bolsa? No, that's Spanish.
Bolsa is Spanish and Italian.
Teak? Took? I forget.
That's I think language is fascinating.
Especially when they're like completely different symbols, like Arabic or Russian or Hebrew, where I'm like, this isn't even related to...
Right. Farsi, have you ever heard Farsi before? Not only is it's a really beautiful language, but it's wild to watch these languages, especially in like ancient Mesopotamia, like how these languages came from. Like if you listen to even Greek, it's not related to any other language in the world. It's its own thing. So you hear people speak Greek, it just sounds ancient to you. You're like, this is so cool. This is like I don't know how to describe, not like an alien language, but like... The fact that only this country in the world speaks it, and it's derivative of like the beginning. I know obviously languages change and Greek is not the same that it used to be. But it's just cool to hear people speak these languages.
My friend Ari said that's why, and he's Icelandic, Ari, and he's like the Danish or the Norwegian, I forget. Look at Icelandic as like, oh yeah, that's what we're supposed to speak. But then we kept evolving and they sort of stayed the same.
English, old English is Germanic and Germanic or whatever the word is in origin. So it used to have more German sounds and then it was influenced by France. And so a lot of our vocabulary, the English language basically changed and quote unquote sophisticated from the French. And so now we use French words. Yeah. Like parliament and all these other things. Like these are all French words. So I think 30% of our vocabulary, that could be a wild number. I have no idea if there's a linguistic listening, but that is, so we're basically like German and French. That's like our language.
It's just like German. And then a French coming in, like, cool, I like the way you said that. Let's all start saying that.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy. And French of the Romance languages is very different than, even though it's 89% the same as Italian, phonetically it's so different than Spanish, Italian, Portuguese, and Romanian.
Yeah, God in Yiddish is Gott.
Really?
Yeah, which is like, I think the same in German. So you can pick out, just knowing English, you can pick out some Yiddish words.
Mein Gott. How do you say that in German? I used to take German class.
Really?
I still remember like, Hallo, ich bin Matteo und ich wohne in New York und ich bin mit meinen Freunden, das ist ein Hund und ich habe 34 Jahre alt.
Damn.
Ein Lerner auf Österreich. It's a weird sounding language.
As soon as German gets angry, all the Jews are like, oh, I gotta get out of here. It's fine when it's not angry, but then it's like, even if it's like, don't piss on my store, it's like, is it, what's okay? So you grew up in Chicago, which is a big city.
Yeah.
So it's obviously easier to be gay in a big city than a small town.
Well, I grew up in the Northwest Side in Arlington Heights, okay. which is a suburb, but it's next to O'Hare Airport, so it's an easy 15-minute train ride into the city where I found salvation. So even just being in the suburbs is, in a sense, there's a feeling of oppression, right? Like, not being able to exist without other people watching you. That's kind of why I think gays are always sort of escaping to the city, because it's just, you can be anonymous. You can live your life and not worry about people checking in on you. So I started going into the city when I was 15, just taking the train, hanging out with my friends in the city, and I moved into the city officially at 17 or 18.
Really?
Yeah. Just to have a sense of, like, a sigh of relief, like, okay, I can breathe, I can be.
When I was working at the Comedy Store, and there was so we would run the open mics too, and whatever, and so
I find the Comedy Store fascinating, by the way. I've performed there twice and was insulted by two of the people at the door, and then was so blown away by how it functioned. It's cool. The Comedy Store is like, the Comedy Cell and the Comedy Store are both like you're walking into comedy history. Mm-hmm. I love it. I think it's fabulous.
It's changed a lot for sure. It's become more corporate in the last 6, 7, 8 years, where they're like lock back rooms that are out of use.
It seems harder before, to maneuver, like, as a comic. More daunting, I think. Less clear of how to
get in and who to talk to. And like, yeah.
Because as a comic, obviously, you just want to be better and perform in places. So you go to places like the Cellar, obviously. It's almost like a very clear path. You look at the Cellar. All right, I have to go to open mics, get on bar shows, get notoriety, be funny, start working other clubs. Eventually, I'll find my way here. Comedy Store. I don't know what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah. Also, they got so overwhelmed once they open up the floodgates when Eget come in. And he's like, hey, I've never met Mitzi. I have no ties of that way. And he just called Silverman and Hannibal and all these people, like, hey, I don't know what happened here before with you guys. I don't know if you've ever been here before or not. I'm just saying, you're one of the top comics in the world. We'd love to have you. Here's the number to call in for spots.
Wow.
And so there was this flood of, like, comics who were like, okay.
The good comics.
Great, yeah, great comics. Ron White, all these, like, really amazing. And so then it's like, and then when a regular, like, Vecchione would go, he's like, they'd be like, there's just no time. There's no spots. There's just none. Mm-hmm. They would kind of, like, try to hold on to people who had spots before that floodgates opened and, like, find time for them. But new people.
It's very, I mean, LA is so fascinating to me. Just culturally, LA functions so differently than the rest of the country. I find LA to be fascinating.
It's based more on hype than on quality.
I don't know. I mean, I can't speak on that. I personally couldn't live in LA. I'd go there, well, before the pandemic, I'd go there once a month. I like going there, and I stay with Nicole Byer. So I like staying with her and her roommate, John Milheiser, and seeing Sashir, like my friends. Like, that makes LA fun, because I get to be with people that I love. But if I had to live in LA, I think I'd probably go mad.
It's vapid.
It's also, I just like the physical aspect of New York City. I like the look of it. I like urban development. I'm actually a nerd. I follow these skyscraper forums, like these message boards about skyscrapers, and watch urban development to see like what buildings are at what height and what's proposed and stuff.
Really?
Yeah, I've been looking at it since I was like 13 and I still haven't stopped. So I like secretly have this passion for skyscrapers.
Yeah, LA is just a town that's kind of just built out.
Yeah, it's very spread. I mean, it's I actually prefer LA at night. I think LA at night's really beautiful.
New York,
but everything sort of has that stain of the 4 p.m. sun on it. I hate it.
I just hate what it does to people. Anyone who comes in there is a cool person. It just, you can't change LA. LA just changes you.
Yeah. Sorry, I was cutting you off. You were talking about something and I completely cut you off.
So new comics would come and we'd see them all the time. And oftentimes when they had just gotten to LA, and new gays, their attitude on the stage. So women had this attitude, like new comic women had this attitude. It's like, I'm a slut. I don't care who knows it. And it's like, most of them work that out. Because it's like, yeah, we're all fucking, like, you know, who cares? But new gays like, I'm gay, I don't care if you know. And you're like, yeah, dude, this place is literally in West Hollywood.
I know.
That doesn't make you special here. I don't know where you came from, but here, you're not special.
It's fear-based. That's what that is. That's fear. It's anyone who goes up on stage and is, I'm this and I don't care. It's like watching Jenny Jones, where there's like these 13-year-olds like, I'll suck a dick and I don't give a shit. I'll do what I want with my body. You know, it's like, it's just coming from fear. And being gay and doing open mics is, I still cannot believe I was able to go through with it and do it.
Why? What way?
It just was so, you know, once you come out, this is just my experience, but once you come out and you find your family, you find your queer family, and you find your life, and you start to cultivate your life based off of, oh my God, I can actually date, and I can do this. And you feel a sense of self-worth, right? You have to sort of shed these pieces that you've built up around yourself to sort of protect yourself based off people's hate towards you, right?
Yeah.
So to go back into that quote-unquote locker room feeling of straight dudes, boys club, blah, 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 even though you don't perceive it that way, I did perceive it that way. It's horrifying. It's like, why am I going back to this? I just escaped this. I just figured out who I am.
The boys club of the comedy world.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember the first night I went on stage, he ended up becoming one of my best friends, Dan Ronan, who was a great, great comic. If you had met Dan, you would have loved, a brilliant joke writer. Funny, funny, funny. He unfortunately passed away.
Oh.
But he...
Hey,
was,
that's the best way to go.
That is the best.
Because I don't feel bad for him.
Right.
It's just like he did.
So he didn't quit.
Yeah.
But the first thing, I don't know what the inside jokes are. I'm just like, in my mind, I'm like, okay, how do I become Joan Rivers? This is it. Uh-huh. So I just sign up at an open mic. I was in Lottie's in Chicago on Tuesday nights, and I'm in there, and you know, you're just so nervous. You're just so nervous. And then like, are they going to hate me for being gay? Do I talk about being gay? Do I not talk about being gay? It just, so many things are flying through your head. Dan Ronan goes on stage. He must have had some inside joke, and he kept being like, I am a faggot. And then everyone would die of laughter, and I'm confused. I'm like, oh my God, is he really gay? Is he not gay? What's happening? He was doing some ironic character about, you know, he actually was pro-gay. But I was horrified when I was listening to it. And that was my first experience with an open mic. So I'm like reverting back. If I was performing at the Comedy Store and I was gay, maybe I was newer in the comedy scene, I would probably do the same thing too.
Yeah. It's just a lot of it's also like what makes you different, and that's what you focus on.
Sure.
And so it's like, I don't know, if my parents were Nairobian immigrants, it's like I'm probably only going to talk about that. But it was just like so unspecial. For me, it was kind of I grew up with only Jews, so I couldn't be like, I'm the Jew. Because it was like, that's everyone around you at the time. You know? And then also
we're
in
Los Angeles,
also
you
in Hollywood,
idiot.
It's like, yeah.
I think in comedy, you know, the standard was set by a specific type of comedy. And then anything that breaks away from tradition is always looked at just a little harder. And now that queer comics are able to be in the mainstream comedy world more than ever before, I think that people are just adjusting. It's just an adjustment. And how?
So I saw this comic, you know, Justin Martindale.
Oh my God, love Justin.
Okay, great. Yeah, he and I were like young comics at the Store together, and we went to South by Southwest and performed a show at Cap City in the front room. And I remember him doing something about like Britney Spears or like very gay culture esque, but without saying like I'm a homosexual. And then like 10 minutes in, he was like, and my boyfriend is like, oh, and he's very gay, you know. He's like, oh, by the way, I'm gay. You guys know that, right? And it was just like weird, like release valve laugh from the audience, where it's like, of course you are. But I just thought it was cool. Like, he didn't have to like state it. And I saw up until that a lot of like stating it.
I used to come out and sing opera.
Oh yeah, that's right.
To be fair, that was a good joke. But now I do. I release attention. I walk on stage every night. Like at the Cellar, for example, I'll walk up. Hi, thanks so much. I'm obviously gay. So, there. Boom. I can move on.
Let's get it out of there.
Let's get it out of there.
Do you still feel the need to say anything?
I like it, though.
Why?
Well, you have to remember, we are the comics. We're used to the comedy world. Sometimes it's people's first comedy show. Mm-hmm. They really don't understand the culture of comedy. And as they're watching, they're being taught what comedy is. From the host to how to behave, etc. So you see a show. Let's say there's 8 comics on that show. 99% of the time, I'm the only gay person on the show. So I understand that I look physically different, I walk different, and I talk different. So when I get on stage, I've got 250 eyes on me. Who are going, this doesn't look like the other 6 we saw.
Yeah.
And the second I say it, there's the release and we move on. Now, when I'm on the road, I don't. People are coming to see me and I don't have to. I can walk out and I can talk about a lot of things that I can't talk about at a show, like at the Cellar, for example. If I'm doing a show there's 8 comics on, it's a showcase. Usually I'll just stick to building material. On the road, I can kind of relax and have a chit-chat about things.
You're performing to people who already know a jumping off ground about gay culture or whatever, so you can make fun
of
the thing.
Most of them are gay.
Right. Yeah. Like when Elon Gold performs at like a Jewish place, he's like, you all know what Yom Kippur is. Right. I don't have to say it. Right. I can go off from like without having to explain it.
Right. I could say, for example, like I had trade the other night and girl, you know, like you can do that and they'll... They know.
I hear what? What was it?
Trade. Well, trade is a hookup, essentially.
Where's that from?
Just like the drag world.
Trading dick? What do you trade?
No, just trade. Just like a girl. Yeah, is he? There's a lot of trade at this gym.
That's cool. Never heard it.
Saying work. I say work all the time.
Do you feel the need to, like, so people will put other people in a category that's sometimes based on, like, stereotypes.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, they'll have to, like, Joe List has a bit about it where he's like, I'm not a nerd. I just have bad eyesight. I have glasses, but I'll beat your ass. Like, I'm from Massachusetts.
Right.
I'm a drunk. Like,
right.
Don't let these fool you. And I know a lot of black comics are like, I'm not hood black and I'm not gonna be. Like, Monroe is like, I'm just not that guy, you know? But I could tell some people, like, want to put him into that category. Do you feel ever like, you know, do you feel like baby put in a corner?
Yeah, I mean, I feel sometimes I notice, like, for example, and hopefully this answers your question, I'll say something and people will laugh, but there's two different reasons people are laughing. People are laughing because they actually get what I'm saying, and there's people laughing because they think I'm playing the faggot.
Yeah.
It's a difficult situation in some sense because obviously to me the most important thing in comedy is the respect of my peers, which I think we all agree on. That's the basis of comedy when you start. It's not money, but by any means, it's not drink tickets. It's did I make so and so laugh in the back? That's your first sense of currency in comedy of I have so and so laughed at my joke. Hannibal laughed at my joke. I'm on cloud nine for a week, right? So to me, to be on stage and to be respected as a comic, it's hard because you're being watched and people are watching. Is he doing this because he's gay? Is he overplaying the gay card? Is he talking about this because he's trying to get laughs? Is he playing the martyr? Is he doing, you know? And I used to really worry about that, and now I just don't, because if I try to defend myself in any way, you end up losing.
Because then you're entering into their world instead of just being yourself.
Right. And the truth of the matter is, I you know, it's like, I don't know how to explain. It's sometimes straight comics ask me questions, and they ask me questions that put me in the defense immediately. They make a statement about gay people and then say, is that true? Not giving any room for nuance or for me to explore, to ask, you know, like, well, gay people fuck all the time. Isn't that true? I'm immediately in the defense. Or gay people only talk about gay on stage. Is that true? I'm immediately in the defense. And it's a really strange position to be put in, where I feel like when I'm on stage now, I'm like, look, the truth of the matter is, I'm really gay. I love Mariah Carey.
Yeah.
I love Barbara Streisand. I love taking it up the ass. I love,
do you?
You know, yeah, I love, I talk gay. This is how I sound. You know, I have jokes about that, but it's like my whole life, I just spent 18 years of my life trying so hard to be what I thought everybody else wanted me to be.
Yeah.
That I'm just not going to go through it again. So I just am unabashedly myself on stage. And if people don't like it or think I'm something I'm not, it's really not my problem.
I wonder if, like, Emma Willman, your co-host on Inside the Closet.
Inside the podcast, Closet, very good. Go on, Ari.
She's one where it's like, she's not uber gay. So you, when you're watching her, when I was watching her in the beginning, when I moved here, and I could see her at New York Comedy Club, I just remember her, like, in passing, mentioning a girlfriend. But it wasn't about the girlfriend. It was about, she's acting like a fucking bitch.
But even, you know, if I came up and was the gayest person on the face of the planet, there's also nothing wrong with that.
No, yeah.
You know, I think a lot of comics think it's a compliment to say, I like that you don't talk about being gay on stage. And it's like, well, I understand what you're saying. You're saying you're not leaning on something that's quote unquote easy to get a laugh. You're better than that. You're writing jokes. Now, that is obviously in this equation. But if I go on stage and talk about being gay for 20 minutes, that's my prerogative.
Yeah,
that's
for
my
sure.
Existence.
I think it's a question of, like, are you talking about, not you, but is someone talking about being gay, or are they talking about a crazy story of sexual sexual fuck up, you know, like when you can't get a boner or something. What's that word? Sexual fuck ups, sexual whatever.
Erection dysfunction.
No. But, you know, when something happens, like,
sure.
Your dog comes in and erupts, right. Whatever that is. But, like, that happens to be with a dude versus, oh, in my same story, it's with a woman, where it's like, no, it's about the craziness.
Right. Now, okay, I will say there's sometimes on stage where you know, when I have started comedy, I'm doing comedy 8 years now. So when I first started,
that's it. Dude, way further along than that.
Oh, well, no big deal.
Yeah. That's crazy.
January 2012.
8 years. That's right when I moved here. Damn. Oh, you're way further along than that. That's great. Well, all right. Good job.
Been a quick run. But I think I really did, you know, again, you're trying to get noticed and you only know so much about comedy. So you just talk about, I'm the gay one, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, obviously, you know, I could, when I do my hour, I talk a lot about being gay, but I also have about 20 minutes just chatting about Ghost Adventures, the Food Network. And then it gets into territory where it's like, I'm talking about hooking up, I'm talking about boyfriends. And I don't really consider that quote unquote gay material because
it's about this specific boyfriend, right, not the fact that you have one.
Right. I'm just talking about my life, you know? And I think, I think also too, I agree with you. I think the more mature you get as a comic, the more you're working and the better writer you become, the less you draw on your group minority, mm-hmm, and the more you push with your writing.
Yeah.
So now I get on stage. Of course I say, hi, I'm obviously gay. That's obviously for release of tension. It allows me to just move into whatever I want to talk about. But you know, I don't feel the need. It's like watching young comics. It's the biography. I'm this. My parents are this. I'm from here. This is like our very first 6 minutes, right? Now it's like I can go up and talk about whatever. I want to bitch about Rachel Ray.
Yeah. Right. But that's so like, that would be, to me, like a stereotypical gay but good comic would, mm-hmm, be like, well, I'm talking about Broadway or I don't know, whatever, but like, it's, yeah, it's my actual feelings about this play rather, right, than I'm gay, so I like Broadway. Right. Or like the Jewish version of that wouldn't be like, I'm a Jew, so I'm cheap. It'd be like Louis Katz going like, this fucking waiter didn't give me back my fucking change. Right. I didn't know what to say. And it's, right, like, you could infer like, it's because he's Jewish.
Right.
But like, he's not saying that.
Right.
Because it's like a personal feeling. I don't know. I think that's what I mean, because I see in every culture of comedy they do that shit.
I see what you're saying, and I agree. I think a lot of it's many parts. One of it is just maturing as a comic.
There's that.
Writing better jokes and getting more exposure. And honestly, being surrounded.
8 years. That's fucking nuts.
I mean, it's you know, I'll tell you what. People say, oh, wow, you know, you've found your voice fast. I'm like, I think a lot of queer people tend to find their voices faster on stage because they've already had to figure out who they were at 13. There's not a lot of self-discovery. Yeah. My friend Trana Wintour, she's a comic in Canada, and she's you would love her. She's trans, and when she's on stage, she's just so confident in her voice, and it's like, this bitch knows exactly who she is. I also used to sing in strip clubs before open mic, so open mic seemed...
So you had experience...
It just like was performing. Like, it just seemed less pressure in that sense.
My buddy has a theory that at the very beginning, like the first 2 months of comedy, women are better at it than men because women are used to people looking at them and men are just like, what is this? Like, it's just never happened, you know?
Right.
And gays also must have like people that are looking at you. Like, what is that?
Yeah. Or want people to look at us.
Right.
My Instagram.
Yeah. What is it about gay culture that it's like, it's so, not all of them, not the bears, but like so bears. Into looks.
Bears are super into looks. That's just the look they like.
Interesting.
I don't really adhere to the animal kingdom.
No, look at your arms.
I'm saying it's like, I mean, these are my arms. Yeah. Thank you. No, I'm saying like bear, otter, twink, cub, wolf. Bleh. I think it's all kind of silly. I think it was a thing that's fading out, maybe. But I get all the references. But I think gays, you know, there's a lot of validation. Obviously, everything stems from insecurity. But I think there's just people find validation with how they look. That's an easy thing to find validation with. Obviously, there's a lot of sexual energy, let's say, within the gay community. It's something that is super prevalent in the gay community, obviously. So I think having a really nice, ripped body is something that gives people confidence. And I'm not saying it's the healthiest means of...
No, but it would give people confidence in the hetero community, too. But hetero dudes are not nearly as in shape as...
hetero dudes seem to be rewarded with less effort.
Hetero dudes are rewarded with less effort. Yeah. I mean, where it's like, if you're just okay, you're like, well, he's a good buddy.
Right. I mean, the amount of shit you don't have to do to be rewarded with a hot girl... Lisa Traeger has one of the best jokes about this, by the way, about... just find... What did she say? I don't want to ruin her joke, but like, find a skill... Any skill, you know, you can. I think women have it a lot harder. I think gay men probably relate more to women in that sense, that where it's like there's, you know, because men can be pieces of shit. So
thank you. Can we?
And we're all, and we're, and it's so put two of them together. It's like, imagine.
Oh
that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, ugh. Yeah. I mean, if I'm fine with my body, but if when I go to gay bars, I feel like a sloth.
I go to gay bars, I feel like a sloth. That's how much body dysmorphia I have. I had a joke. I'm like, you know, people think gay bars, we open the door and it's like, woo, party. I walk in, it's a room of side eye. You might as well hear like, just like, I'm like, it's like Joe List joke. Is everyone mad at me? Like, what is going on? There's just a lot of, who's she, you know?
Yeah.
But I actually have found I don't really drink anymore, so I don't really go out. If I go out, it's to watch like a friend do a show, like Pixie or Keisha Carr or whatever at a drag show. And then I'll go out. I'll be with my friends and we go to see a drag show and support our friends and stuff. But I've, going out and dancing and drinking and stuff, I did it all.
You're done with it.
Done with it.
Where do you meet dudes now?
It's on Instagram usually. Grindr.
Fans.
Instagram. Fans. Like, I mean, just people who find me hot and will message me, or me vice versa. You start liking each other's pictures and then it's like, hey, hi. My last boyfriend and I found each other that way.
He likes your pictures?
I liked his first, then he liked mine. Then we started talking, FaceTiming, jacking off. Boom, boyfriend.
Isn't it weird how that's the new way of like looking at someone across the room at a bar? You know, where it's just like someone likes two of your pictures, like, oh, two, not just one. And then you like one or two of theirs back, which is the, because otherwise you might get rejected. So if you like a back, like, cool, then maybe I can like leave a comment on yours. It's just inching
comment
forward.
That's high.
What's the next step?
If someone likes 10 of my pictures in a row, after I've liked theirs, then I DM them
straight to DM.
Yeah, comment, I could never. That's
why?
I don't have too that public? Kind of. That's too vulnerable. A comment, I would. I usually DM a smiley face.
Because right, smiley face or like. What I'll get sometimes like, oh, you're so funny and like a little bit of like, and cute, and I just like your comedy. But it's like they slip something in where it's like you can't risk rejection,
right?
So you can't put it out there,
right?
You can't be like, hey, I'd love to go out with you sometime. That's way too much. And if you see it red, then with no response, it's like hurtful.
If I gays move quicker. But sure. similar startup. Yeah.
Da, boom.
Yeah. That did my boyfriend. We lasted almost 2 years and all just from Instagram.
Wow. Is there a lot of cheating in the gay community?
I think there's a lot of cheating in every community. I literally, I was so naive up until maybe like 3 years ago. But cheating is just everyone's cheating. I literally think, and I was trying to write a joke, it never worked out, that couples therapy should just be called "We're trying to avoid cheating," because everybody cheats. Every community, gay, lesbian, straight, all my straight, but every
do lesbians straight, cheat?
Do lesbians cheat?
I thought lesbians cheat the least because they're all like, that was a great day, you want to move in together and play
well,
like,
that's
wifey.
There's an old joke about gay dating where it's like, what does a lesbian bring on a second date? A U-Haul. What does a gay bring on a second date? What second date?
Right. Yeah,
so silly.
But Justin, when he had a boyfriend and he's a good looking guy, and back then 12-18 years ago he was in his prime.
Justin,
yeah, Martindale. And so he couldn't stop cheating, and
Justin was cheating.
Yeah, I mean nonstop. And his boyfriend was just like over it, but like couldn't ask him not to anymore. He was just gonna keep doing it. And he goes, can you just please don't give me AIDS?
Oh my god.
Yeah. And Justin was like, I mean, I'll do my best, but it's just having a lot of unprotected sex, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean that part too. Yeah, I feel like cheating is just everywhere. So yeah, there's definitely cheating. But you know what, I find this may be a huge generalization, which I hate doing, but I do find, at least within the people that I know, there seems to be more open communication about one's needs and desires in the queer community than the straight community. I feel like the straight community is still plagued with this like jail cell of, we are going to behave this way because we play by the script.
By the Victorian
and
rules.
Kind of like this sort of like platonical, this sort of puritanical, like, I am woman, you are man. In the queer world, it's like, well, we've already been told from a young age we're not you, so we're going to play by our own rules. And so I think the idea of having an open relationship or having more flexibility in one's relationship in the queer community it's kind of more, maybe more like normal, casual, I think. I don't know. But in my group of friends, you know, a lot of them are open and they're just okay with it.
Also, you're dealing with other men, so there's way less chance of them just getting hysterical and like crying.
Sure. Although I would get hysterical. I mean, I've been cheated on and I got hysterical and cried, but I'm also Italian.
Yeah. I mean, if you bring up like, hey, maybe I'm thinking of seeing other people, it wouldn't be like, hey, what do you mean?
I would say, like, all right. I would say, like, even now, like if I got serious with somebody, we would have that conversation pretty early on. Like, well, I would like at least monogamy in the beginning, but you know, we'll talk down the road.
Monogamy in the beginning. What a great way to put it.
I get it. I mean, there's a guy that I was having sex with regularly. We would like schedule sex and he was married.
Really?
Yeah. And you're just sort of like...
Married to a woman or a man?
A man.
Okay. Wow. And the man knew?
I think, yeah. I was told he knew.
That's crazy. I was an other for a while. And like, that I was known about. But like, I was like, it never wasn't weird for me.
I think it was so fun. Because it was like in and out, no pun intended. And
there's
then,
zero bye. Chance of it turning into anything, so it's so freeing.
Oh my god, it's fabulous. And then when someone actually does like me, I just I collapse. I don't know how to accept somebody liking me, so I start to like clench up and close up.
Wow.
I'm fucked up.
Well, yeah. But that's what makes you unique instead of gay. You know, that's specific to you.
I clench up to my Mariah Carey book.
What is that to? What is gay culture in terms of like reality shows, fabulousness, grandness, or like
Selling Sunset?
What?
Have you seen Selling Sunset yet on Netflix? Uh-uh. It's like made for gay men. You mean like the extravagance, the
Mariah Carey? I don't know, the pomp and circumstance, the costuming. It's like there's like,
yeah, we're just more fun. We're just more fun.
Yeah, nah, it's something specific to that. Like Mariah Carey is just
I'm
as good as like
I'm
White
kidding.
Stripes.
Okay. Ari, I don't know. I think there's a lot that goes into it, but yeah. I really couldn't tell you. I will just say, as a gay man, I was definitely drawn to extravagance, drawn to Streisand, drawn to Mariah Carey, Patti LaBelle, Whitney Houston, Judy Garland.
Yeah, Judy Garland is a
huge
hero.
Maria Callas, Fran Lebowitz. These are all my like gay icons. Miss Piggy.
Kermie. Miss Piggy?
Oh, Kermie. Hiya! Yeah, she's like a gay icon. Joan Rivers. Kathy Griffin.
Kathy Griffin. People, gay community loves Kathy Griffin and Margaret Cho.
She was
Cho.
The first person I ever heard in my entire life say something positive about gay people in comedy. I will never forget ever, you know, talking about gay people. It just, comedy wasn't for me or for a lot of queer people growing up because there was no person or act that was speaking to us. I understand why a guy talking about his wife and kids is so appealing to most people because they are a wife and have kids. So if there was a gay joke, it was usually at our expense.
When I started, just saying gay was a punchline.
Of course.
Yeah, it is no longer, but like...
I remember being 16 and hearing Kathy Griffin for the first time making jokes about gays, but in a way that was like, this woman sees me. And I remember being nervous for her, thinking she shouldn't do this. She's going to lose her career. She shouldn't do this. People aren't going to like her. She's speaking positively about gay people. That's how fucked up I was, because I was just still in that internalized homophobia of like, do not reveal yourself. You'll get caught. You'll be killed. So hearing Kathy Griffin for the first time, I will forever be in debt to Kathy Griffin and Margaret Cho.
How did Margaret Cho get the gays?
Because she's amazing.
Yeah, I love her, but like...
Usually a woman, I don't know, my friend Pat kind of described it as almost like these women that we are drawn to is because we weren't represented. There was no gay people or queer people really in media, TV, movies, commercials, magazines, anywhere. So what's the next closest thing? It was almost kind of like drag, like Liza. Like we could almost mimic them. And I think some of these women shared that dual feminine masculine qualities that a lot of queer people have, where, you know, it's like they're like Judy Garland, for example, is feminine, right? She's the dresses and the this and that, but she has these quote unquote masculine qualities, these strong booming voice, this alto mezzo soprano voice, this power behind her that we clung to, because it was kind of like maybe just being misunderstood and making it.
Misunderstood and making it.
Like Barbara Streisand, she was being interviewed once, and this gay guy was like, "Why do you think you made it?" And she goes, "You know, everyone told me change your nose, cap your teeth, dress like this." She goes, "And I didn't. And I think because I was different and I was misunderstood and I made it, that other misfits were felt
could also,
yeah, felt attached to it, which I get."
Yeah, I wonder where Margaret Cho comes in, though. I mean, she's very, like, sex
positive. She talks so much about gay people and that's queer people, yeah, and being, you know, best friends with gays. And, yeah, she made... And most of her audience were gays. She's such a funny fucking woman. And she was on stage just being such a badass and you know, talking about things that gay people talked about.
Yeah.
So, and Kathy Griffin, I mean, she was just dishing dirt. And you felt like you were getting in trouble with her. And, oh man, she was great. She
both
was
hetero great. Though.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret probably fucks everything.
No, Margaret's, I think, queer. I think she's really? I don't know how she identifies sexually, but I think she's queer.
Yeah. It's almost like those white comics do the black circuit, where you're like, what is it about you that black audiences love?
Right.
Like Gary Owens. Like
maybe a little different though. Something about it's different. I mean, being a woman in comedy for so long too is kind of is misunderstood, and they're the underdog.
Yeah, and Margaret Cho's not doing gay comedy. Gary Owens doing black comedy.
Mm-hmm.
If Margaret Cho goes up at the Improv or the Cellar or whatever, it's just like, right, it's just there.
Kathy Griffin was just talking about shitting on celebrities.
That's right.
But that's what gays
love that
loved
shit.
It.
Yeah.
We were like, yeah, Joan bitch, gossip. Uh-huh. Oh, Joan Rivers changed my life. Joan Rivers changed my life.
She's an interesting one because she was just such a hard-hitting comic.
She's the best, to me, the best comic that ever existed.
You think so?
No question.
Acceptable answer, for sure.
Yeah.
But later when she started like doing the red carpet shit, it was like, damn, this is like gays love this. I just thought it was like, aren't you gonna, like when I was a kid, I was like, aren't you gonna see these people at parties? You're so mean to them. She didn't care.
That's another thing too.
Like, even like her daughter was doing with it, it's like, fuck you, bitch, to her daughter.
Do you ever hear what she said about Anna Nicole Smith after Anna Nicole Smith died
on no.
the red carpet?
What?
Oh my God. This is Joan Rivers, so don't cancel me. You can look it up. Type Joan Rivers, Anna Nicole Smith. It's 50 seconds. This bitch goes on a rant. She goes, Anna Nicole Smith has died, yet Trim Spa has still held on to her contract because she's lost an additional 80 pounds. Everyone's claiming to be the father, and Lance Bass is claiming to be the mother. I mean, it just doesn't stop. She goes, the autopsy shows that there was no drugs in her body, just a lot of sperm. And they're going to bring her body back down to the Bahamas, photograph it one more time, then bury her. Wow. I was like, Joan!
Oh, wow.
My God! This woman's not even dead yet.
Oh, my God.
I don't defend that joke, but I'm just saying, Joan Rivers to me, man, she just fucking didn't give a shit. And at least she could defend it with good jokes.
Yeah.
With good writing.
My favorite with her was just seeing the abortion jokes, but in black and white.
Yeah.
Where you're
she
like,
called them appendectomies. My friend went to Dominican Republic to get 14 appendectomies.
Yeah, but it's like it's not even like the it's not even like now it's a little like, oh Jesus, it's like black and white, like this isn't, it puts you in a place of like there's no way this is acceptable.
She used to have gay jokes that was pro gay. It was called my hairdresser named Mrs. Phyllis or Mr. Phyllis or whatever, like, which, you know, you would look now and be like, oh, that's so kind of like cute, but back then it was like, whoa. You're
like, who, what? Yeah, yeah. What so I like how all these cultures kind of slowly but then kind of quickly change. Like, once you started seeing, like, black skateboarders, you want to be like, hey, everyone with your stereotypes, you got to update these. Because black skateboarders are real. And when
black people don't skateboard?
Not when I was a kid.
Okay.
It was just white and really just West Coast.
Yeah.
And then it, like, shifted and stuff. But, like, and then Brazilian skateboarders started and they just started dominating.
I obviously know nothing about skateboarding. Yeah.
But, like, for a while, it was like, that just wasn't a stereotype of black people. And then when Kanye had a polo shirt on and, like, Chappelle's show when he was, like, young, it was like... And wearing a backpack, you're like, oh, what? And it's like, yeah, those old stereotypes are old. So, like, stuff slowly changes, you know?
Yeah.
Grindr has maintained a consistency in the gay community.
Yeah, it hasn't changed a bit.
What's it like using it now? And, like,
is it just a hookup site? Grindr should just be called Broken Promises. I mean, the things that I've said to men and the things that I've promised that would make your skin peel off. But, you know, I mean, it's just like, you're in the moment, you feel hot, you chat with somebody, and then you wake up the next day, you're like, whew, I got a shower. Usually you don't meet people up. I mean, Grindr is just kind of like Candy Crush at this point.
You just say dirty shit and then jerk off?
Yeah. I mean, jerk off. No. I mean, that would be like, that was way too much effort. It's literally the same as like you're on Candy Crush. Ah, who's around? Blah, blah. Every blue moon, you find someone, you'll hook up.
Wait, is it just to feel attractive?
For some people. I mean, some people are on there like that's their job. Like, do not tap me. I'm old. You must send face pic. Do not, you know, it's like you take this just too seriously.
When Tinder started, we were all hoping that it would be straight Tinder Grindr.
Tinder is child's play.
Yeah. And it didn't mean turn into that.
Child's play. Do you understand in Grindr that it shows you how far someone is by the foot?
That's crazy.
By the foot.
So you could be at a bar and just like, what?
And it would, I used to make a joke. It was like that scene in Aliens. Like, you'll be, I'm like, they're 5 feet away. Where are they? You know, they're in the ceiling. Yeah. It's, and not just that, but there's no matching. There's no, like, you have to match somebody. You just message them. And you can just message them dick pics or hole pics.
Wow.
So you could just be on Grindr, like, boop, and then you look and it's just some guy's, here's his dick, there's his hole, and then he'll write, hey.
What matters more? Well, I guess it would have to come down to each individual person. I was going to say face or dick.
Face.
Face matters more.
I need a good face.
To you. Are there some guys who are like, I don't give a shit. Just show me the dick.
Yeah.
That's also crazy. But I get that too. I'll fuck an ugly chick with a great body.
There's times I'm in those kind of mood where I'm like, I don't care what kind of citizen you are. Please show me your dick.
I'm not wasting my time.
Yeah.
What do you like?
What kind of guys do I like?
No, what kind of dick?
I mean, anything bigger than a 7.5, I have to up my insurance. So I think, like, let's cap it at that.
Yeah, you're small.
I'm a little tiny European. Yeah.
I don't know what your asshole is like, but
I got a good one. I got a great butthole. No, it's like nice and tight. Yeah, 7.5 is fine. 6 is fine. Six is like completely fine. You don't need like a giant. I mean, some people do. There are some bottoms out there who are like, I need it. But for me, I'm like, I'm fine with like 6 to 7.5.
What about a fiver? What would you do a fiver? It's like
of just exactly 5.
Yeah.
It might be. I mean,
so imagine a 6.
What does their apartment look like?
Okay, so that would have to come into play.
Do they have a dishwasher?
They have a
washer and dryer.
No, they do not.
I'm gonna go with a no. 5's not enough. 5 with a washer and dryer. I'm coming over.
I feel so bad for dudes with small dicks. None of them don't have a complex about it. Because
I think
it.
I feel like I really truly, and now jokes aside, I really don't think dick size matters that much. I mean, it really just doesn't. You don't need that much. No one needs that much dick.
But if it comes up in conversation, like, what's your partner's dick size?
Right.
No one's like 5. You know?
Oh, you said fine? No, 5.
Yeah. There's always one person who's like 8, and you're like, what? Everyone's jealous of that person. No one's like, cool, whatever.
Do you know I was just on Howard Stern 2 days ago? I know you have a wonderful history with Howard Stern.
I know mine. He used to be great.
I was a judge for the prettiest penis contest.
Really?
Yeah. I was on for an hour and a half.
That's good. That sounds like old Stern.
Yeah. And I was like judging dicks and stuff. It was so fun. And because I'm a huge Stern fan, I fucking love him.
I used to be.
And I know you guys, you are so notorious for getting involved in these public fights.
I just forget that I'm being recorded when I talk.
My God, Ari. And with the whole Kobe Bryant thing, I was like, Ari. I was at brunch at the Cellar. I was like, what are you doing?
I like to throw wrenches and shit.
Don't you think it's funny? Just as a side note, don't you think it's funny how the world perceives comics versus how comics actually are?
Uh-huh.
I sometimes think the world perceives us almost like superheroes. Like, what is Magneto doing hanging out with Professor X? These two don't belong to each other. He stands for this and he stands for that. I'm like, we all just see each other as comics.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. You know?
The wrestling world was that way too. We're like, wait, you guys are leaving the stadium together. You're mortal enemies. And you're like,
right.
Oh, that's... I'm just Bob in this gym. Right. Not really.
Right. Not. Like, you know, whether I'm getting lunch with Jackie Fabulous or whether you and I are sitting here and talking, it's like, we're just comics.
Well, dude, I wish it was more that way. But there is this weird new thing now where people are, I don't know if it's social media, where people are now comics I see are taking it to heart too much.
Well, I think there's also generational things too. Like, I mean, once you start doing comedy you quit your day job.
Profession.
You're doing it weekends and, you know, you're going through the grind and you're working on projects and stuff. you know, you really just start to see less. I'll never forget, Mike Racine said this to me. He goes, didn't it seem, and we were talking about this earlier, but he goes, remember when we first started comedy, how big the community felt? Like, it just felt like there were just hundreds and hundreds. And like, as time goes on, it just becomes less and less people. And it does. I mean, it really, at some point, the group around you is remarkably smaller than it was when you started.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we're all friends with each other, but it's like, my closest friends would be like Evan Williams, Yamanika Saunders, you know, Marie Faust. You know, it's like, your group is just smaller.
Yeah.
But when we see each other, it's like, we see each other as, generally, see each other as comics. Maybe because,
well, it's like, they come upstairs, like, how was it down there? Is a universal, like, it's fine. Maybe. Whatever your level is, or whatever you're talking about, right, you can tell me if they're a good crowd,
like,
or a bad crowd.
I think maybe, like, the newer generations of comics probably view us and older comics in a different way, but that's just a part of the game. I mean, when we were new comics, we also viewed comics who were doing it around longer than us as different.
No, I'm talking about more of, like, not just, like, that's an older comic, or, like, that guy's hacky. It's more like, that guy's evil. He talks about this instead of right. Like, no, they're just making a joke, dude.
Sometimes I go back and forth, because I definitely think there needs to be a place for people to explore ideas in any sense. Yes. And the history of art is the history of playing with danger. And that line gets moved every time something else. I mean, even in the sculpture world or painting world, or, you know, it's so funny, like John Singer Sargent, who's a great American painter, and he paints very, like, kind of realistic. I don't know how to describe it to the layman, but he did a painting of this woman who, you know, kind of had her cleavage out, and it was so controversial. Oh my God, and this and that. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's, I think about paintings now. Look at how much the line moved. In terms of talking about jokes, I think we both hear a bunch of jokes. For whatever reason, we just think you didn't have to say that.
Yeah, sure. There's sometimes you're like, lame. But it would take a long time for me to be like, you are lame. You comic are lame.
Instead no, I don't like, know if I would like, go that far. I also don't lose sleep over it. I kind of liken it to, like, I don't listen to Eminem because I don't like the things he talks about. I don't hate Eminem.
Yeah.
I don't think he should stop.
Not for me.
I just don't put it in my life. There's so much content out there. I find it shocked that anyone chooses to be offended by something when there's just so much content.
Like, you're spending content. Your time on stuff you hate?
But I do think that it is our job as comics and writers and thinkers to always elevate, where is the conversation going in society? What are the things that people say, and what are acceptable in the sense of, like, how are we evolving? How is the language evolving? Like you said, gay is not a punchline anymore. We've evolved.
Yeah.
We just know that it's not funny anymore.
You can do it. You just won't get a laugh.
Right. And we hear comics doing it. Mm-hmm. And I can think of a few. And you're like, I don't get angry or offended. I just think, dude, it's just, like, not funny anymore.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's always there's tons of material I used to do back. I know it's been 8 years, but back in my day, that I don't partake in that kind of comedy anymore. I just feel I've evolved.
Yeah.
It's a very tight rope to walk, because
it's also, you try to cross a line sometimes. Like, you try to cross a line.
But that's also what comedy is.
Yeah. That's
comedy.
Carlin said that, right? Find the line and cross it on purpose.
And Joan Rivers said it, and so did Kathy Griffin and all the other gay icons. But it's like, yeah, I think that a lot of times to create art and to move art in a new direction, you can't stay in the same place. But if society is moving, and right now society is rapidly moving in a whole new direction, then we've got to be ahead of it. We've got to be able to think ahead of it.
Sometimes it's weird. Like, I'll have, like, a school shooting joke, and then I'll go on stage and do it, not realizing there was one that day.
Well, that's also just every day there's one in America. Right. There's simply just a school shooting every single day.
But then the crowd takes it as, like, you're commenting on this thing.
Right.
Instead of, like, what thing? I didn't even know.
I agree. I actually get really angry. There's many parts. Everything is nuanced, people. It's not so black and white. And I think one of the nuances in comedy is the narcissism of the audience to assume that I had them in mind when I was writing a joke when I don't know them.
Yeah.
That's like walking up to a painting and being furious with Edward with Hopper because he didn't. You didn't consult me before this painting? It's like, well, no, that's not what art is. Art is about presenting something.
Your own shit.
Right. And if however the public receives it is however the public receives it. We'll learn, because comedy is instant gratification. They're either going to laugh or they're not. And if they don't laugh, then I've learned that I need to up the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't understand this whole, you know, audience members dictating how an artist should create.
It's crazy. It's crazy because, like, that's what you want. You want someone doing stuff to please you.
Right.
Or you want them doing what they want to do, and you either into it or not.
Can't we just sit and watch something and not agree with everything? Are we not allowed to do that anymore?
Can you see a movie and be like, I liked that. I didn't like the one character. I thought he was kind of too crass.
Too gay.
Or whatever it is. And you're like, okay, well, I happen to like that character. And then you talk about it over a diner late night.
Right.
You know?
I mean,
wish he didn't go back to play baseball anymore. I wish he moved on and met with that girl.
It's interesting about comedy, and Jim Norton talked about this, how even discussing topics like rape, you can have it in movies, poetry, music. You can literally act it out. But something about jokes, people cannot handle it.
It's like you talking like me is doing an impression of Ari Shaffir saying this thing. So it's like, that's your real feeling, because you're not playing a character,
right?
You're yourself saying something. You're not singing it. You're not reading lines. So they just feel like it's like those are your real feelings. I don't know. It's strange. People get madder at it than if someone's acting.
They do
out.
Get more upset with comics than any other art form, seemingly.
No. Real visual. I remember him saying that on Kamau Bell's show. It's like, you can act out a rape. That's not more triggering. Seeing a realistic looking rape's not more triggering than someone making a joke about.
But I guess because jokes are usually, people think of jokes as making fun of something, which I actually don't think what jokes are. But
you don't think that?
No, I think jokes are creating a reaction that's tension and release, right? So it doesn't always have to be about, it doesn't have to be at someone's expense all the time. It can also just be an observation, or it
it's
can
about
be
some, there has to be almost always has to be some sort of expense. It might even be like a major thing. It might just be like lollipops.
True.
But like someone's getting it in some way.
Well, I think because comedy is generally fueled by anger.
Right.
So
Jay Leno said he wouldn't make fun of his wife on Tonight Show.
Who gives a shit what Jay Leno says?
But he's like, I love her. I don't want to make fun of someone I love, so I'm not going to include her.
Cool,
in my
Jay. Ads. Well, we've been talking about your jokes for the past 30 years.
They're lame jokes, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still mad at him for not booking Joan Rivers. But I don't know. I mean, there's both sides, and both sides have a point. But at some point, it's like, well, I mean, it's such a weird time to do comedy, because everyone now suddenly has to pay for their sins of what they said in the past, and people don't understand what comedy is, because comedy is the only way to create is by making mistakes on stage. And
it's also strange if, like, with like social media or something like that, where it's like you're talking to a larger audience, and like, so who's in your room?
Right.
Like, so if you're the seller, you don't care about the person walking in to go to the bathroom.
Right.
If they are half a joke and get mad, like, well, you're not here.
Right.
So I know you're going to go upstairs and like tell everybody how awful a thing I heard, but like, I can't worry about you because you're not here. So then do you worry about like the people who follow you on social media, or do you worry about everyone else who has access to it?
Right.
And like, what's your responsibility there? And it's like, well, you don't want to be mediocre and have just a B-minus act that everyone can get into.
Yeah. And also it's weird when people just assume what you mean. And
yeah, with that Kobe thing, I'm like, I'm not making fun of Kobe. I'm making fun of you mourners who didn't know, give a shit about this guy.
Do you regret tweeting that at all?
No, oh, I loved it. I thought it was one of my biggest hits.
Ari!
I made an entire city angry at me about a guy I don't even care about.
Oh, my God.
It was great.
You are so crazy.
All you got to do is, like, attack. I do the same thing with Bader Ginsburg. You just shit on her a little bit. And then you're like, all you people fucking pretending to mourn. You don't even know a thing about it. You're playing a role. You saw the fucking documentary.
But you are so crazy. I mean, I could never. I did a joke. I never posted my material. I deleted Twitter.
Good, smart. I did too.
And I never posted my material. And so I posted this joke that I did. You know the Comedy Cellar show? Where it's like
topical.
So one of them was the topics was Mike Pence, and so I was like, well, I can talk about Mike Pence. So I wrote this, it's such a silly joke.
It's also like, yeah, but whatever you're going to say is like, I don't stand by this. It was something I said in passing.
I know.
Fucking relax.
I know. But I wrote this joke. You had 2 days to write it, right? So I got on stage. And I still think it's funny where I said, Mike Pence, you obviously start with fact, right? Mike Pence hates gay people. That's a fact. So now I have to push, this is just explaining joke writing, but now I have to push it to such an extreme example to make humor of it. So I said, you know, if he had it his way, he'd put us in prison. And let me just say this. If I was at home and the government knocks at my door and they said, we're taking you to gay prison, I'd say, sign me up. You know, we'd be reenacting the musical scenes from Chicago. Do your worst. Anyways, what did I say? I'm like, you want me to come? Or I'll come and I'll come. Like, or some stupid joke. Anyways, the point I'm making is Mike Pence is an ass. And I don't like him and I'm full of fear of him. Well, I posted that joke on Twitter and a queer blogger got wind of it. Who doesn't know me, posted it, and then said, Mateo Lane is dangerous.
Dangerous. And what a crazy word, because it means anything you the reader puts on it.
Right. And then said, Mateo Lane wants gay men to go to prison. Then my Twitter feed flooded with thousands of
people who weren't even at the show. Weren't even.
And don't know me.
Right. So they're coming to it only from someone telling them, hey, you guys want to be angry about something?
Right.
Watch this.
Exactly right.
And so why would you care if they're mad at you? And I mean, I get that you would be.
Sending me articles of gay men who died in prison and what's happening in Uganda and this and that. And I thought, I mean, it's so ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, how'd you take it?
Well, I was sitting with Bob the drag queen, who's my best friend. And Bob has fought many a time on Twitter and said many controversial things, and he has 1.5 million followers. So he's used to getting shit. I'm just putting that so people understand the context. I had 60,000 followers. He has 1.5 million. And I was really upset. I never responded, and I was really upset, and I thought, you know, what do I do? And I immediately had that feeling of, do I have to apologize? And Bob looked at me and said, let me just get this straight. Are you saying to me that you just never want to be offensive for the rest of your life? And I said, well, no. He goes, okay, then don't say anything. And I thought, sure. Now, Bob is stronger than I am, but then I thought, I have a choice whether or not I want to allow myself to be hurt. Am I going to open my phone and put myself through pain or not? So I deleted Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, that's when you deleted it.
And I thought, you know what? I never looked back.
It's great.
And maybe I'm weak. Maybe I couldn't handle it.
It got corrupted.
Yeah. And I think too, I'm like, I kind of liken it to World of Warcraft. When you're playing World of Warcraft, no pun intended, you're a troll, right? Or whatever. Yeah. But you are a wizard and you are in a guild and you are fighting and it is real to you. The second that laptop closes, you're back in the real world. Huh. So that's Twitter. When you're in Twitter and you're staring at your phone, it's all very real to you. Gloria Steinem said, you cannot have a conversation with someone without all of your senses being involved, because otherwise you're not having a conversation with somebody. And I believe her, because you need to feel, hear all these things in order to understand the humanity of that person so I can converse with them. Otherwise, I'm just projecting.
And you're just looking at this little avatar, and you're like, that thing is bad.
Right.
And you're like, wow, that thing has 7 kids and then takes in orphans.
Right.
And you're like, but that's not part of that summary.
Right. You know, and so that was kind of when I decided, like, I'm done.
Yeah. It was corrupted. It got corrupted. It was so negative where people were only, and I know this is me, like, writing negative jokes, but like, those negative jokes are like, trying to be positive, like, let's all laugh. But I mean, like, you mentioned something about like some great artist. I'm like, well, I heard he did this. And it's like, oh, Jesus. Like, guys, just look at the art. Look at the artist. Like, how about like something?
Well, it's like, you know, I did this college show. Can I put my foot up here? Is that fine?
That's cool.
I did this college show once, and it was a queer college show. And it's always great. You go and there's like, kids can just really be themselves these days. It just is great. You know, I'm non-binary and I'm like, God, I wish I had this kind of fucking confidence when I was 18. To me, it's amazing. I mean, to me, it's like,
that's crazy to want to stick out instead of like, dear God, don't let me stick out. Don't let me wear a hat or anything that'll call attention to me.
Or it's more in line of how you just felt. Right. Yeah. Like, you just wore what you liked to wear and didn't think twice about it. So we're slowly getting to a place where if you're queer, non-binary, and you want to wear a caftan, that it's just as normal as someone, you know, like, I'm hoping that it gets there. Yeah. I understand people not understanding it, but like, grow up. Anyway, so this kid raises his hand. You know, we do a Q&A. I always do a Q&A at college shows. It takes up time. And I was like, you know, who has questions? And this kid, he's probably 18, and he raises his hand. He goes, yeah, please, yes, what's your question? I want to know what you think of RuPaul.
What you think of RuPaul.
Right. And so I said, Well, it sounds like you have a thought on RuPaul,
that's
so why don't you...
That's such a good answer. That's such a good answer.
I said, why don't you tell me what you think, then I'll tell you whether I agree with you. Well, I think RuPaul has been terrible to the trans community, and RuPaul should apologize for what
terrible.
They said.
Terrible to the trans community?
So I said to them, look, I don't agree with everything RuPaul says. RuPaul's not perfect, but... The whole reason that you and I can sit here and have this conversation openly is because of RuPaul. Because in the late 80s, early 90s, when everyone was dying of AIDS, a 6'2" black man put on a fucking wig and challenged everybody's idea of what it means to be a man and sexuality, and really made it okay for us to have these conversations. Made it okay for you to ask that question. So it's okay to not like something that somebody says. That's fine. But you cannot completely scrap everything that they've done for you and your existence based off of one or two instances.
That's smart.
And this gay teacher in the back stood up and started clapping.
What did the guy say?
They agreed. They said, you know, okay, I never thought of it that way.
That's how I feel about Howard Stern, by the way. I'm like, what? Pioneer allowed me to do a podcast where I could, literally take a dump during outros and just like film it without whatever. And it's like, I couldn't do that without him, but I'm just not a fan of him anymore. But it's like, Replace Howard. A History is fucking great.
Yeah. But I just think that we've gotten to a place now where it's like, we have to forgive people or okay, so RuPaul's not perfect. Yeah, that's fine.
I like answering questions and knowing that's not the question they're asking. Like if they're like, what do you think of RuPaul? I'm like, well, her driving record is not perfect. Yeah. I know she had a couple tickets, so that's not great. When they ask me about Louis, I'll do the same thing. Like, what do you think about Louis? I'm like, well, Chewed Up was great. What an amazing special. I remember one time we had a nice walk and just refused to answer what I know there. But it's like, right. So say it if you want to say it. Right. Bill Burr does that same, your answer. He does that about Me Too for a while.
Oh, he does?
So like, what do you think about Me Too? And he'd be like, what do you think? You clearly have an idea because you brought it up. Right. Why don't you tell me, why don't you get your own soundbite for a second? Because all you're trying to do is catch me on something.
Of course.
Answer comics. Perfectly and boringly or I can write you off.
Well, we have to be ahead of everybody else, right? Yeah. You ever think about that sometimes when people like say something to you in public? And I'm like, they don't know that I'm a comic. Like, I have 50 insults lined up. Mm-hmm. I'm about to light this woman up.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm prepared for
this. This is child's play. Yeah. Yeah. Am I being too serious? I hope I'm not being too serious.
Nah.
Okay.
I think, I'm wondering what it's like. I mean, it just must be so much different now than it was when I first started noticing gays. To be homeless. I took this... whatever studies class in college, and they were talking about something in small towns. World War One was really big for gays because they got drafted and they were living in these tiny towns when they thought they were just this evil inclination person. They didn't know anyone else was like them. And then they checked in and the people checking in, the new recruits were gays. They would always get those jobs. And they were like, hi, I'm here to so-and-so. I'm like, you know who you are, right? And they're like, no, what do you mean? Like, you know, there's others like you. And they're like, wait, what are you talking about?
It's like the X-Men.
Oh, right. Yeah, but now it must be so much like such a better place to like start being gay. If you're an 18-year-old gay now, goddamn, it must be way easier.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not. Hopefully, it's not in vain. I mean, you know, it's a lot of people died. A lot of people were killed, were kicked out from their families, and you know.
Do you feel a need to focus on the negatives of being gay instead of the positives? Because it seems like the culture we have now is always like black culture, whatever. It's almost like you have to say, like, it was hard, instead of like, that's great. I love it.
I think it's
New
both.
New York's a great town to be gay in.
I think it's completely both. Yeah. I think it's, the reason you hear people of a certain minority, right?
Yeah.
Let's just use that word for now. Talking about the trials and tribulations is because they're also thanking their ancestors who came before them.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, obviously I don't talk about it all the time, but we're doing an interview, so it's more appropriate now
for sure.
Right, and we're this sort of specifically talking about being gay and stuff. But when I'm with my friends, no, we're like trying to learn Beyonce's homecoming dance or playing Super Smash Brothers or playing Fortnite or having a fucking great time, you know?
Yeah, when I talk to you at the table, the cellar, there's no like, or very small amount is like, there's a gay guy. You're conscious of a little bit of everything about anybody.
Sure, well, I'm an Italian speaker. But, yeah. I mean, you know,
besides what's his name from Iran, it's like
Mehran
from Iran. Oh, does he say that? He should say that.
I don't know, we should text him. We got a new joke for you.
But besides that, it's generally, it's like we're at the point, maybe it's just Manhattan and New York, where it's like, oh, that's just a dude. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's in some people's eyes, like, oh, problem solved, like, you know. But then in other people's eyes, it's like, no, this is still very real to me, you know. So it's and I think my friend Bob brought up a really good point where he was like,
Bob the drag queen,
yeah, he's like, enough of these gays celebrating and thinking everything's great and going to brunch, because trans people started this revolution and they still haven't been treated the same way we've been treated.
So where did trans people start? Was that
Stonewall?
Stonewall's trans, right?
Oh yes, Marsha P. Johnson. So, you know, until they feel as equal as we feel, our work's not done.
What is Martin Luther King? An injustice to one is an injustice to all.
You're a better history major than I am.
I learned one quote from black people and that's it. But yeah, where you can't just be like, fine, we're good now. It's like, no.
Yeah.
The deal is if anyone's like, getting it.
But all these trans people who got us to where we are, they need our help. Well, yeah. Then the work's not done.
Yeah, that's fair. But then it's also like, Jews have this too. It's like, we had a bad time of it for a while.
We had a great time.
Right. So that's like, it's like, it must be tough to be a Jew that was a Holocaust. I'm like, sure, if you ask me to like sit in that, I'll tell you, like, synagogue gets shot up once in a while, but
there's a time and a place.
I live in New York, man. I'm a fucking hero here. Like, you're asking me to be mad about it.
But
it's
being
fine.
Jewish, I mean, that's the unique thing about being gay, is whether you're Jewish or black or whatever, you know, obviously if you're adopted, that's a whole different story. So let's just generally speak. You're born into your culture.
Yeah.
I'm born like, what the fuck am I?
You're not a product of two gays. Yeah, that was always the weirdest thing about gay. And also, like, gay black or gay Italian or gay Latino, or it's like a gay version of this other culture. And right, and no parents, you can wipe out a culture, like a nation or a race. You can't wipe out gay.
Nah, it's just we're
like,
gonna keep
you wipe
back.
Them all out, and then like, boop, boop, 10% of the new group is gay again. Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. There's no 23andMe to be like, you have gay in your blood. Last question.
Sure.
The mustache.
I knew you were going to ask about my mustache.
Really?
I thought about that as I was leaving, because I was shaving, and I thought, I bet you Ari is going to ask me. You know, sometimes you think about like what I'm like, I bet you Ari is going to ask me about my mustache.
Yeah, not specifically your mustache. The mustache is a gay accoutrement.
And Italian and Mexican.
Yeah.
So I've just covered all my...
How did it become part of gay culture? That was like a gay stereotype, the mustache.
The mustache. Well, you know, we like to be a little festive, a little something extra. It's like that scene in Birdcage with Nathan Lane. They're trying to make him look straight. So he's got the suit on and he sits and it reveals that he's got a pink sock. And they're like, your sock. And he goes, well, one does want a hint of color. It's like,
yeah. Dude, this is fun.
I had a great time.
Yeah.
What
fun.
Glad
you did it. Yeah.
I think we've always had good conversations at the Cellar, mm-hmm. and then it's interrupted by someone or something.
And the crazy is, you're a person I point to as a I can disagree with, but we can have a casual, like, good discussion.
Yeah. We were having one time, and then we got interrupted. And remember, you texted me. You were like, hey, I really liked your point of view or whatever. Like, I'm sorry we got caught. Cut off. I mean, that's also the Cellar.
The woke
Cellar,
mafia.
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus.
The Cellar is also like, I mean, you can't get a word in inch. There's no, you can't be, I mean, Keith Robinson sitting there, you're going to be interrupted and told you're an idiot at some point.
Yeah, that's the Cellar, right. And also comedians in general, it's like, I'm going to try to take the biggest stance on something.
Right.
I'm like, what do you think of Black Panther? Rarely people go, it's okay. It's either, so the pastor, like, it fucking sucked. And no one's like, it was a B.
Right.
No, because comedians are incapable of giving out a B as a grade to anything.
No, comedians are extreme people.
Mm-hmm.
They love or hate. That's it.
Yeah. Or just don't even weigh in.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a head on your shoulders, man. It's like a fucking, there's a bunch of people you can talk to, and there's some you can't, and you're a person you can talk to.
Oh, thanks.
It's just nice to be around. And you're getting better and better on stage. So it's fucking cool
thanks.
To see.
That is a high compliment from you. I think I remember the first time you saw me do comedy and you said something really nice to me.
Well, you said something really, up until that point, I'm like, this would go either way.
No, you said something really nice. I think you actually said something really nice to Lisa Traeger, and she told me. And I always kept that
about
in the back
you.
Of my mind. Yeah.
That sounds more like me.
Yeah.
Than rather to go up
right
to a person
is face.
Like,
yeah.
fucking way. Be nice? No. I just inside. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did I say about you?
Something like, oh, Mateo's good or something along those lines, something positive. So, you know, I was like, oh, because I was kind of afraid of you at first.
Yeah, I got, that's what Adrian said. Like,
Adrian Epaluch, she said that about you.
She was like, I just assumed you're an asshole. I'm like, why? I've never been. She was so standoffish at first. And I'm like, what? She goes, I don't know. I just thought you were a dick. I'm like, based on what? She goes, I guess reputation. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm a heel. I'd like to play the heel. Maybe that goes out. But yeah, whatever. But yeah, I love her too. She's crazy.
Oh, I love Adrian. She's another one. She's such a good joke writer. Yeah. And she's,
and she does jokes that make people go like, this could go either way. I could be like, fuck you. Or, ah.
She doesn't care.
And if you're like, I hate you, she goes, yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I get it.
Oh, she doesn't offensive. Give a shit. Yeah. All right. Well, we could talk forever. I have to go. I'm going to meet a bunch of gays to watch the debate.
Oh, great. That's awesome. Thanks a lot, man. This was cool.
I had a great time.
Guys, oh, also, everybody watch Inside the Closet. With
Inside the Closet.
Emma Willman, another fucking great comedian. And follow Mateo on Instagram only, at Mateo Lane.
I'm naked all the time.
Is the episode, everybody. I'm Ari Shaffir. Thank you very much, Mateo Lane, for coming in. Don't forget to check out his podcast with Emma Willman, called Inside the Closet. Emma's fucking hilarious. I should have her on, too. Damn, I fucked up. I was in New York the whole summer, and I didn't get as many good podcasts as I could have. Well, remind me, you guys. Remind me. And where can you remind me? On my Patreon, patreon.com/Ari Shaffir. Bonus episodes every week, exclusive merch, and so forth. And, you know, Patreon, help support me. And if I get to 5,000 subscribers on Patreon, I don't think I'm going to do any more ads. Maybe like 5 a year. Not even that. And then how will they benefit, Ari? Because, I don't know, exclusive content. So thank you very much, Mateo Lane. That was fucking enlightening. The fact that he lets dudes with HIV blow loads into his ass is a fucking revelation. Nick Cody, we have had some arguments about revelation. If you don't know, Nick Cody went to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. First time I was there with him, I think. And his poster said, Nick Cody, he's a revelation. And man, what the fuck does that mean? What did he reveal? What did he reveal? Forget that. I'm not even saying it's just stand-up comedy. I'm not even saying that. I'm saying, what did he reveal to you? That you can do jokes while being... if you've never seen a physical comic before? He's not one. Or like... I didn't know you could do this and stand on a fucking treadmill the whole time. Or I didn't know... I don't know. I didn't know Australians could fucking stop doing coke for fucking 8 minutes so they can get on stage for an hour. It could be a lot of things. But I don't know any of those that would apply to what you're fucking doing on stage. Again, it's not saying anything's wrong with Nick Cody. It's a funny comic. What is he revealing? This podcast, Mateo, you are a revelation. Dudes with HIV blow loads in your ass. I mean, you guys are free. I remember when it was a fucking death sentence. Jeff Scott just died. How the fuck did he not? Oh, well, nah. Damn, yeah, I guess maybe I should talk about it on this episode. I guess it would fit. I just found out Jeff Scott died. He was a piano player at the Comedy Store, and man, fuck, he was cool. But, so, he was cool. He would get fucking drunk, miss fucking playing people up. After 11 o'clock, he was 50-50. But he was fun. He ran fucking good shows with us, and he cared about the store. He cared about the history of the store and shit. And, dude, he had HIV. He had the 80s AIDS. And he was a test case. He had survived it. I don't know how he had survived it. And so people were like, whoa, what's with your blood? Like, all his friends died. We did a podcast about it, me and Jeff Scott. We did a podcast about it, about being gay and what it was like in the 80s and shit. Go look that up. If you're watching YouTube, they'll flash it on the screen right now. Ah, I just remembered about Jeff Scott dying. And he was at the store 4 to 5 nights a week. You know, till 2. Always loved the fucking young kids coming in, the new ones, until they got too old. I was like, ah, that's some new young kids. Brighton Biddlecombe, you'll stay young forever. That's sweet lips. You should have seen some. One of the gay comics was way into, like, young kids. Not young kids, but, like, you know, 19, 20-year-olds. He would just, like, stare at Brighton Biddlecombe. He would go in the back and just go like this, like. Way in the back when Brandon's on stage. We're like watching Brenton and then look over and see him and just like not knowing what he's looking like. Anyway. But Jeff had HIV. And we're all in the back smoking weed back when it was like a real place to go smoke. We would just smoke when it was like no one else was there except the paid regulars who were there late at night. It was just us. So it was all the same friends over and over again. Passing joints around. Pete C started coming then. Had some, the best fucking OG Kush in the world. And we'd just be passing around. It was laughing weed. It was laughing weed. It would give you a danger zone. Like, you would start to get like, oh, I gotta go, I gotta go. And then someone's like, hey, all right, I haven't seen you. You're like, oh, how you doing? You're like, I'll give 2 minutes. No, I gotta go, I gotta go. If you can wait out the 10 minutes of danger zone where you're like, everything's a danger, you can be like, and we're going to the back, be like, oh, I'll come with you. Yeah, that's Pete's OG Kush. Best in the world. Anyway, we'd be passing these joints around. And then we'd get to Jeff Scott. And you'd be new to LA. And he'd fucking put his fucking HIV lips all over that J. And you know you heard in high school and college that you can't get it that way. You can't get it from sharing a cup with somebody. Side story. You can check us out on my Instagram. Instagram.com/suckmydick. I was in some town. A fucking tarantula about that big. Size of a baseball. Not all the way around, but width. A big a juiced baseball. No, that'd be unjuiced if it was big. On the back of my toilet. I don't know what to do. And the next door neighbor, a fucking man who's like 65 or 70, but a man where I'm not. He just fucking put on a... I went to go get help. In the interim, this is what I heard happen. Put a paper bag over his, up to his elbow. Got it. The thing started scurrying up his arm. And he was like, oh, fuck. And I got back. They were all just staring at him. I was like, how did it get outside? Did it fucking jump? And they're like, no. Fucking Gary picked it up and took it. So. Yeah. And so he's like, it's harmless. It was a tarantula. They're harmless. I'm like, okay, you can tell me it's harmless. And if you had to ask me on a quiz to bet my money, I would be like, yes, I bet it's harmless. I think that's true. But if you're asking me to touch it or go get help and let someone else fucking touch it, the answer is clear. Okay, you get the backstory. And if the answer is you're 25 years old, you've never met anyone with HIV, you've met 4 gays in your whole life, and somebody with HIV is taking a fucking joint out of their lips and saying, here you go, because they've been smoking with people. He's been smoking with people that are where you would get eventually. You take that joint, which just touching, you're like, can it crawl up my... And you're just like... And you got to test. You got to test yourself. Will I be an asshole and take it and go, no thanks. Even though, of course, you went back there to smoke. We just lit it up. It's not... You can even say, like, I'm high enough. We just went there to smoke. So you say, no thanks. Really spit on his soul. Or do you say, I'll just take AIDS. I can't be the guy... Who tests somebody like, I don't think, so I get it. But I do think it will give me incurable AIDS, but I'll still like, what option do I have? So you started smoking it, and then none of us got AIDS, and so it's pretty cool. It was fun to see new people come back there with Jeff. And no, I'm like, the best one-time Tebow. So Jeff was aware too. Oh, dude, you got to see that. There's a clip on fucking my Six and Jump podcast where we, Becky, put it up. Let him fucking take the money from it, but see if it'll stay up. But of just this dude for the AIDS in the late 80s, and he's like, I've got HIV or AIDS, and he takes some milk. And Johnny Depp is like, Hanson, Detective Hanson is like, I forgot my milk. And he's like, sits out of his straw, goes, here, man, take some of mine. And man, we laugh so, because that's not, even if it's just me and Jay, take some of mine. He'd be like, get the fuck out. He'd probably knock it out of my hand. And I would be mad and also like proud of him. But
But yeah, and so we'd see new people come in and have to deal with like, oh, wait, can you get HIV? It's like you haven't thought about it for a long time. And so then suddenly you're like, you have to think about it, and you got to answer now. Here's this joint. So you see new people, and they're like, and you're like, oh, yeah, I went through that. Dude, that was like, oh, that was decades, a decade and a half ago. And then you get over it. Because that really is. It really is the best OG Kush in the world. Yeah, he was a fun guy to hang out with, Jeff Scott. He'd play piano and he'd play it well. He'd always, he'd just play song. It was classy. It was this classy thing at the Comedy Store. He worked the main room on weekends. The OR every other night when Brad Watson wasn't working. We've had other guys here or there. He'd always get so mad. On Mondays, they'd have a sketch group when the store was really struggling. They'd have a sketch troupe come in. It wasn't Mo Better Monday. It was like, I don't know. They just did sketches. I worked it like once. Not on stage. I mean, I worked the door once there. It was lame. But harmless. They'd always mess with his soundboard. He'd be like, who touched your soundboard? He would get so mad. And he'd drink these dirty martinis. Real dirty. Lots of olives. He'd get drunk and get fucking handsy. With Renazisi, mostly. He wouldn't back up. but so he'd play piano in between everybody. Instead of having just music playing. Bum, 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 bum. I'm standing in Brooklyn and waiting for something to happen. That's my walk-in music. When I just have to get, pick something. Like, pick something from the radio, that. But Jeff Scott playing piano was so cool. It was old-time, ragtimey shit. I don't know. It went with the store. It was classy. It was a sign of what Mitzi did to pay a guy instead of just having a doorman play 15 seconds of song, which could have been just as easily, or not having anybody. She paid this guy forever. She was classy. And he was classy too, man. And he would play you up. And then when he got to me, a lot of times, he would just start going like, he would play Havana Gila, but like ragtime version or some like knocker version. And I was like, thank you, thank you. And then he would keep playing. And I was like, thanks, everybody. Thanks. All right, Jeff. Thanks a lot. I'm like, all right, thanks, everybody. And I'd be like, all right, that's good, Jeff. Hey, so. And he just keep playing. And I was like, hey, so. All right, Jeff, that's good. Thanks a lot. Appreciate that. And just keep playing Havana Gila or like the Israeli national anthem or just some fucking, you know, Shalom Aleichem, something. He just knew him. He knew everything. He's self-taught, too. Couldn't read sheet music, he said. That can't be true. Is that true, guys? Could Jeff Scott not read? He could play anything. I'm trying to think of a pun with he couldn't play AIDS, but he never got AIDS. Stayed on HIV the whole time. Real original. He played that, and I'd say stop. And then eventually I'm like, what was that? He goes, well, I don't know. I'm like, were you making fun of me through song? And he always like, whatever. And I'm like, all right. He's like, no, I play that for everybody. And then I turned to the crowd, like, did he play that for everybody? We would just like, it would just like come up organically over the years and morphed into this fun thing. Oh, I love the Comedy Store. And then I start my act, and he just go, Jew, Jew. And I'm like, it's fun. Who cares? You're not showcasing for anybody. We're having fun. God, that was fun. So anyway, he passed away. He fucking ate it. He's sucking dicks in heaven. It's too bad. He was a great guy. He died of a heart attack. They found him, his cat had, like, ripped away a large part of his face. Because they went hungry or whatever. They had to survive. I get it. You got to survive. But, like, they said the fucking scene was just, like, he was, like, a comic book hero. Just, like, a villain. Just, like, with his half just skull, you know, out. And then the guy who discovered it, but like, freaked out and fucking stomped the cat to death. He just fucking, you know, stomped it. And it's apparently the screams that it went out. The neighbors said they've never slept the same since. It's been like a few weeks now. So, anyway, the open casket funeral was, well, thank God for COVID. They weren't allowed a lot of people in. It was limited to 10, which was for the best. So, damn, Jeff Scott, you're a true original, man. That fucking sucks. That's not true about his face, by the way. I think they just found him. I don't even think he had a cat. Anyway, you guys, that's the episode. I'll put this out in February. Look at this. Isn't this fucking great? Please hit subscribe. I'm trying to put on cool videos for you. I'm trying to make it where I'm not just sitting at a desk when I can and add a little fucking something. You know, I could just do it at home. It'd be faster. It's easier. My back wouldn't hurt. Shit, it's starting to rain. Anyway, that's it, you guys. Thanks for tuning in. Hit subscribe. Hook it on my Patreon. I'll see you guys later. But yeah, hit subscribe. Yeah, even if you're like, I'm not getting to your Patreon. I get it. You don't want to open up your e-wallet. I understand. But like, I don't watch some of these. I'm fucking putting on a goddamn show. I'm Ari Shaffir. And I'm the world's greatest living entertainer.
Fisher, learn science, technology. Where can you begin to make your dreams all come true? On the land or on the sea? Where can you learn to fly, play in sports or skin dive, study oceanography? Put your mind at ease.
It's the Navy.
Come on now, people, make a stand.
It's the Navy.
Can't you see we need a hand?
It's the Navy.
Come on, protect the motherland.
It's the Navy.
Come on and join your fellow man.
It's the Navy.
Come on, people, and make a stand.
It's the Navy.
It's the Navy.
It's the Navy.
Put your mind at ease.
Don't you know you're queen? We are even flower bloom at my feet. Don't you know you're queen? Cracked. Peeling. Middle with disease.
look